Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, coming to you from beautiful, sunny, occasionally Florida. It's not sunny right now. It's 51 degrees. It actually is kind of tropical compared to the 28 degrees it was at this time Monday when I started this ridiculous week. This is our anniversary show of January 6th. And if you didn't hear last year's show, you missed something pretty incredible because we had a couple folks there. We had Josie Cossey, who does our Latino report, was calling in live from D.C. at the Capitol, and Jonathan Mosley, who does our legal report, was there at the Capitol also. And she was amazing. I was listening to the show a little bit this morning, last night, over the last couple of days, and our show was long, so believe me, it's easier to listen in fragments. But what was incredible is that Josie just, you know, literally passed the phone around, just grabbed people on the street and said, what do you think? What's going on? She had a Marine. She had various other folks. And they're all there universally to support the president, the real president, President Trump, and to support what Congress was supposed to do, which was challenge the election. And I'll go over that in a little bit. I'm expecting Dave Schneier to call us at any time with Schneier at 6. Good morning, Dave. It's 6. So let's get him going this year as soon as we can. But Gene's here. And, of course, Gene wasn't producing during our January 6th last year. Actually, I'm not sure exactly when you started. It hasn't been that many months, but did you get a chance? I don't know if you heard our show from last year, but we literally had just this amazing series of calls, and it wasn't a lot of the show because we had a regular guest. Josie was on at the beginning of the second hour. Jonathan was about the last maybe 25 minutes of the second hour. This is back when we only had 2 hours on the show, but just to be able to listen to what they were saying right there before everything happened, because the show airs. They aired 7 to 9 at that time, so that would be 8 to 10 Washington time. That was before Trump even spoke, before the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in, before any of the things that happened. Okay, there's Dave. He's on the line, too. So let me get a comment from Gene, and then we'll go to Dave, because it's going to be a busy, busy morning. We have reporters all the way to the end of the show. Jonathan's going to join us early in about an hour. Gene, what are your impressions of January 6th, 1 year ago?
It's sad. Very sad. It's a sad day in our history for the fact that people are still in prison, haven't had their due process. Why, I don't know. Just for the fact that so many people dropped the ball on what should have been because they let fear. And not only that, I think there's a lot of cover-ups, a lot of planning that was done in Washington, and that's why we have the January 6th committee as we know it, because they don't want us to know the truth. They're hiding things. They don't let us see the footage of what people have seen. And so it's just sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just it's the first time in our history where the government has actually chosen the government rather than the people.
Right.
And to try and cover that up, they've got this January 6th committee, which is literally the covered-up committee. Let's get Dave on right away.
Right.
This half hour is going to go really fast. I know, because I know us. And let's get your take on it. Dave, Schneier at 6. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. I think I was thinking about, some things, like what I really thought about this January 6th stuff recently, just to kind of challenge myself. And the way that I kind of view it is that I think the safest thing to say is that there is a lot of stuff that obviously went wrong with this, and it has to be looked into. If Republicans take back, the House in 2022, they need to launch an investigation into what really happened here, because there's a lot of different
things. Why aren't they doing it now? Why wait till then? Why aren't they doing it now? Why aren't they holding hearings off-site? Why aren't they having a daily press conference, the election correction? Why aren't they screaming every day that the Democrats hold, elections, hold hearings?
Yeah.
During Watergate, this is before your time by quite a few years, but I remember Watergate. I got to this country during the Watergate hearings, and you had Republicans running those hearings against Richard Nixon, a Republican, back when there was this honor and decency and a desire to do the right thing. So why aren't the Republicans? Why wait? It's like they always say, well, we'll get them next time. When they lose, this is the gelding party, and I call them that for a reason. The gelding old party, because they refuse to do anything. They don't have to wait until then. They could be doing something. They could have done something November 4th. they could be supporting the audits. They could be supporting states to have audits. They could be doing what Jenna Ellis and Rudy Giuliani did. They could be taking affidavits, getting them around. They could be interviewing everybody that filled out an affidavit. They could have people a day giving testimony of vote fraud.
Mm-hmm.
There's an amazing amount of things they could be doing. But this idea, and this is the problem, because you wait till then, and there'll be another excuse. And there'll be another excuse why they can't act. And while we don't have enough of a majority, you know, Biden will still be able to veto anything we do. Excuse, excuse, excuse. That's why I unregistered from the Gelding Old Party. Back to you, Dave.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, those are good points that you brought up, and maybe they should investigate. They should do it immediately. I would like to see them, you know, eventually sometime start to look into it, because there really is a lot of answers that we need to answered. I would say though that for me personally, just because of there really is like a lack from what I've seen of like hard concrete evidence about what really happened, regardless. So I don't think it's
what do you think really happened?
Safe.
That's a good question. What do you think really happened? Let me see if I can.
Well, I have a lot of suspicions about what happened, but I really don't.
No,
know.
Go ahead. Just that.
I don't think anybody really knows. But I think it's possible it was instigated by Antifa or Black Lives Matter. Well, no, I mean like on public. Obviously, people in government do. But, like me and you, I don't think me and you really 100%.
Well, I don't
know
everything.
I think we have good ideas. I think we have good ideas about what might have happened.
Well, what are your ideas? But tell me what you think happened.
Well, I think it's possible that it was a mix of federal agents and Black Lives Matter and Antifa that instigated the situation. I do believe there obviously were some Trump supporters in the Capitol who did raid it. I think if you're trying to prevent a raid from happening, though, maybe opening the door and inviting them inside the Capitol isn't always the best idea, though.
See, this is the title of the show. It's the Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In. So how many people were invited to walk in by the Capitol Hill police, and how many actually broke in? And when did the break-in happen?
Yeah.
Well, do you know when the break-in happened?
When? Like specifically when? Or
yeah, because the timeline is critical. If you understand the timeline, you understand a lot of what happened. Okay. So the timeline is most of the Trump supporters were still listening to Trump speak. Trump started his – see, here's what screws up everything for the deep state. Trump was still speaking while they were breaking into the Capitol. So the idea that Trump supporters broke into the Capitol is a lie, because both the Trump supporters were still back at the Ellipse, back by the White House, which is a 45-minute walk. You know, timelines are important.
Yeah.
You watch cop shows, you know, murders and things like that. Where were you between 6 and 8? You know, well, because it matters where you were. Mm-hmm. Well, if you were at the Ellipse listening to Trump speak an hour late, you couldn't have been breaking into the Capitol.
Yeah.
So who broke into the Capitol? And why? Let's get to because this is really critical to understand. And from this, you can tell your friends, and you can share this on media, and you can make a YouTube, which I want to see. But it's critical to understand why it happened. What was the purpose? Because if you understand why it happened, then you know who did it, and you can start to fill in the pieces. I'll tell you, there's only one thing that I haven't figured out, and that's what happened between when Congress broke up their sessions. I think it was 1 o'clock in the Senate, 1 o'clock in the House, 2 o'clock in the Senate, and then they came back. I think it was 6 hours later, so that would have been 7 o'clock in the House and 8 o'clock in the Senate. They came back. I don't know what happened during those 6 hours. That's the blackout.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I'm calling the talk, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But let's go to the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing is why. Well, first of all, what was going on that? What was scheduled on January 6th? Let's kind of walk you through that. What was supposed to happen?
Well, Trump is holding his, Stop the Steal protest and rally.
Well, what's going on in Congress?
Washington, D.C.
And why was he holding
Congress,
it then?
Certification of the electoral. Yeah, certification of the Electoral College.
Right. By doing what? Go ahead. This is the civics for today. You're going to love this.
I don't understand the question.
Okay, so let me answer for it. What they were doing was they were counting the votes of the electors in every state. Why is that important? Because they had to certify them. And why is that important? Because with 270 electoral votes, somebody gets to be president.
Yes.
Okay? Now, the whole purpose of that, though, is in the certification, there's always a challenge. Okay? So members, if you have one senator and one representative, and one member of the House, one member of the Senate, who challenges the results, then they have to go into session and argue it through and take on the challenge. Okay? So what was the first state to hold it? So what was the first that was being challenged? There were 7 states that had dual sets of electors. The governors and secretaries of state had Biden electors, okay, Those are the fraud ones, as far as I'm concerned. And then you had seven states that are the Trump electors. Do you remember what states they were?
Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania.
New Mexico, Wisconsin, Michigan.
New Mexico, and Wisconsin, yes.
Yeah, and I think so. Yeah, so it's Arizona. Let me go through it from left to right. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. Those are the seven states. Okay. Coincidentally, where are the audits being held or should be held? Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia. That's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first state alphabetically to be challenged was Arizona.
Yes.
And what happened? As soon as Arizona came up to be challenged, what happened?
Is that when the Capitol raid happened?
That's when the doors were open. So, that's when the Capitol Hill police opened the doors. That's when the invitational walking started. Okay. Where were the Trump supporters?
At Trump's speech.
Which was?
45-minute walk away.
Exactly. And now you understand.
That's making
so what was
sense.
The purpose of the Capitol Hill walk-in then? The Trump supporters aren't even there. Okay, Trump supporters are the patsies. All right, the Trump supporters are the setup. Trump supporters are the shills. They're the unwitting accomplices to this little drama. So who walked in? Who walked in when the Trump supporters were at the ellipse? Who walked in?
Mm-hmm.
Who?
Yeah,
you know who? Antifa, Black Lives Matter, FBI operatives, you know, and anybody else they drafted in, costumed people, people wearing Trump gear, things like that. That's who walked in.
Mm-hmm.
And why did they walk in right then? What was the sole purpose of that entire operation?
To disrupt the hearings, to make it sure that they wouldn't, you know, happen.
Exactly. To stop the challenge. So Trump supporters wanted to stop the steal. But the reason that the folks walked in to stop – the reason the folks walked into the Capitol on that day, were invited in, was to stop the challenge to install Biden illegally. Okay? Now, who would want to do that? Who would want Biden in office?
I mean, everybody in Washington.
Yeah, exactly. The Republicans, the Democrats, the Democrat Marxists, the Republican geldings. All the voters, all the D.C. mayor, the Capitol Hill police, I mean, everybody that hated Trump because he was an American first, okay? Which means Washington is Washington first. It's bureaucracy first. They're not American. They're globalist first. So if you understand this, if you understand why they walked in, you understand who walked in. Because the Trump supporters walked in and did what? Walked around, took selfies.
Yeah.
You know, and a few people really did some stupid stuff. Yeah, and those people should be arrested. The people that stole things, broke things, stuff like that. I don't care who they were. That's just dumb. Even walking into the Capitol is dumb. I mean, I can't say that I wouldn't have done it because I'm kind of a goofy guy. I make mistakes. I might be in the gulag right now. Okay, so now given that, now, has that changed your opinion at all of as to your feelings on January 6th?
I mean, it does. It does.
Okay.
I kind of had the same views. I mean, I always figured that, you know, probably was federal agents that, you know, instigated this whole thing. All I was saying is that I would like to see, like, you know, some hard. I agree with you know the logic behind it. And I think it's highly probable. All I was saying is that I think they should fully investigate this whole thing just so we can actually get to the bottom of it, and so the public can know what really happened on January 6th.
Agreed. Who's going to do that?
Yes. Yeah.
Who?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's going to do that? I'm not accusing you. I'm not trying to berate you here. You're not under the bright lights of some 1930s, you know, film noir cop film. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm doing this because you know this is how I sort stuff out myself. So the question is, if we're going to save our country, who's going to do it? The Gelding?
I mean, honestly, I don't know. I don't know who would investigate it.
But that's critical. That's the really critical. I mean, why is the January 6th committee even allowed to exist? Why haven't the Republicans stood up every day and tried to defund them? And so, look, you people are the cover-up. You know, why aren't the Republicans holding alternative hearings, for example? Why aren't they off-site taking testimony, having live televised coverage? I know One American News would do it. Newsmax would probably do it. Fox News, well, it depends on which way the wind blows on any given day. But you know it would get covered. You know documentary filmmakers would be all over it. If the Republicans held alternate hearings for January 6th, You know, I think I'll make that my press conference. press release. In fact, I got two press releases. One is going to be on the talk, but the second one's going to be on alternative Republican hearings. Thanks, Dave.
I think there's two reasons behind why the Republicans aren't doing it. I think one is that a lot of them simply don't want to. Like they wouldn't want this whole thing to be resolved at all. They agree
why?
With, you know, with the Democrats. And so, yeah, okay. Well, they either don't believe that the election was stolen or they do and they're, you know,
I think they know. But here's an even scarier question. Given that everybody knows the election was stolen, because, you know, first of all, the Democrats know because they did it. You know, nobody knows better that the bank was robbed than the robber. Okay? No one knows better that the election was stolen than by the people who stole it. I don't care what they say.
Yeah.
All right? So the question is, why do they not want Trump? What does Trump stand for? America first, independence, freedom, a great economy, you know, strong military, you know, plentiful energy.
Yeah.
And who's against that? Who would be against all those wonderful things?
Lobbyists.
The people trying to destroy the country. And who's trying to destroy it?
Yeah.
The globalists. Okay,
yeah.
So you got the Washington paid off globalists versus the American folk. So that's where the real battle is. Okay, it's not Republicans and Democrats. It's globalists and Americans.
Yes.
Given that context, who's going to stop the globalists?
The America first, the people.
America first, the Trump supporters, okay?
Yeah.
And so who do we have to get to do the official stuff? Well, we need officials to be able to do that. I think the Republicans have to hold an alternate hearing, or somebody has to. Maybe Heritage Foundation should do it. Maybe one of these think tanks, one of these, you know, instead of spending so much money on the next luncheon, you know, with caviar and, you know, Dom Perignon champagne, congratulating themselves and paying themselves on the back for raising, you know, $50 million. Why not actually hold alternative hearings? I might propose that at CPAC. In fact, I'm going to propose that. I'm going to write CPAC a letter. Why isn't CPAC holding an alternate hearing? Hey, you're really helpful today. Thanks, Dave. Gene, this guy's great. He's getting all these ideas.
I would like to add, I think there's another point also, is that I think there are some Republicans who, you know, might agree, you know, with what you're saying on the show and things like that, but then would say that we just need to, I know what you're going to say about this, but I'm just saying with it, but just kind of.
Oh, no, go ahead. Say what you're going to say first. Then tell me what I'm going to say.
What they would say is that by doing this, it would heavily hurt, you know, the Republican Party's chances, especially in suburbs and things like that. Like, people don't want to hear, you know, about this anymore. The majority of Americans don't think the election, according to polls at least, the majority of Americans don't think the election was stolen. So that I think that there are a lot of people who
think
it would be best for the Republican Party, electorally speaking, just to move on.
Yeah. So in other words, stealing our country, stealing our government, having an illegal coup, taking over our government, subverting every one of our constitutional principles is somehow not popular with the American people. We should just move on. Does that make any sense at all?
Well, yeah. Well, it happened happened in 1960, but Richard Nixon believed the election was stolen in 1960, but he didn't want to disrupt the, you know, I guess the democratic process, so he just let it happen. And I don't know if that was the right thing or not, but it's definitely happened before in American history.
Well, it's interesting that the election was stolen from Nixon. Nixon ended up getting impeached anyway for election fraud, basically.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. That's you know, the whole creep, the committee to re-elect the president. It was the cover up. Okay, so the cover up is really worse. It's bad enough to do the crime, but it's worse to do the cover up. Okay, so the real crime here is not only the coup but the cover up, which makes the people of the deep state far more guilty than Nixon could ever have been.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Because not only did they steal the government, they've also done everything unconstitutional since stealing the government. Be interesting if they stole the government and did the right stuff. That's an interesting thought. What if they stole the government and actually reimposed the Constitution, including the budget? That would be fascinating. You know, if they stole the government, they then did the right thing, imposed freedom on everybody. There's an interesting philosophical thought for you. Okay. But I think, and Gene and I have talked about this, that without a correction of the election of 2020, there's going to be no 2022. There's going to be no 2024. They're just going to keep promising we'll get them next time. You know, it's this mantra the Republicans have. So let us lose this time once again, and we'll get them next time. And we'll get them next time.
Yeah.
Means they're going to, you know, this is where it goes. Anyway, what do you want to talk about? See, I told you this half hour was going to go fast. It always does when we're on. I love having you on. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no. I think I'm going to head out pretty soon just to start getting ready for school and stuff.
Okay.
But thank you for having me on, Greg. And I think we had a really good talk about just the whole January 6th situation.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Listen, we're going to do it all day, but I think Gene wants to say something before you go. Gene, do you want to get Dave?
No, I just want to say good job, because it's interesting getting everybody's take on it and have open dialect. I think that's really important, because we really do need to get the truth out there. We need to discover the truth, too.
Oh, yeah, and I'm going to do my best. Dave, why don't you give your contact information and your YouTube channel, and don't forget to share the show with your friends, and we'll see you next week. So,
all right,
where do we find you?
Yeah, so I'm Dave Schneier. If you just look up David Schneier on YouTube, you'll find my YouTube channel. We'll be coming out with more content in the future. But, yeah.
And how do you spell your name? Because it's not an easy spelling.
S-C-H-N-E-I-E-R.
There you go. Nice job, Dave.
Yep. Have a good day.
You take care. We'll see you next week. See, Dave's great. I mean, it's funny. I don't always announce him as, like, you know, he says he has to get ready for school. That might have shocked a lot of people. He's fairly young, okay? And he's great. I love having him on. So age is no restriction to the show. I think the youngest person we ever had on was 11. Christian Frenette, Shelby's kid, talking about chess. He set up a chess website. So age is no barrier at either end of the scale. You know, you can be 96 and come on the show. I don't care. And so it's just, if you got something to say, it's easy to get on Action Radio. I'll give us a call. 215-383-3832. Obviously, I should say it more often. So the other ways to get in touch with us, we have live chat. So if you go to the bottom of your broadcast page, listening live, because you can't do it on a podcast, so there's no live chat on a recorded podcast, then simply we got somebody online right now who was on yesterday. So type us a message. And you know who you are. In fact, I think you probably could see it. S-E-E-R-I-K 414. Yeah, type us a message. If nothing but say hello and where you're listening from. Because we had Switzerland listening the other day. And so this is a good way for internationals to also get a hold of us. So you can do that as well. Go to the live chat, bottom of the page, register. It's free. And then you can type us. The other thing is we have a Skype line. So anybody wants to call from another country, very easy to do. Just look at our broadcast page, the Skype line, rather complicated address, but there it is. And you can get us that way as well. All right. Gene, comments from what Dave and I were talking about. Any reactions? What do you think?
No, I think it was good. Yeah. You know, I definitely think, I don't know, honestly, if it was so much cover up or people just are not wanting to know the truth, but I mean, it goes both ways. Democrat, Republican, whoever, they should all want to know the truth and not Pelosi's version of, I don't even want to say her version of the truth, because it's not the truth, and it's her cover up. So, she's partly responsible for the cover up, put it that way.
Oh. Hugely responsible for the cover. She's the one who's running the January 6th committee. Yeah. Well, and this is where it gets to the basic nature of the person, of the official, whether it's the bureaucrat, the legislator, the executive, Brandon who's assumed the White House unjustly, as far as everything I can see. And it was interesting when Dave said there's not a lot of evidence. A lot of people feel that way because they haven't seen the evidence, they haven't heard about the evidence, and yet it's very easy to find literally dozens of hours of video of Jenna Ellis and Rudy Giuliani going to various state hearings presenting the evidence. They had stacks of affidavits. We've got the video of people scanning the same ballot, 100 times. We've got videos of suitcases coming out from under desks. You've got testimony of trucks arriving with out-of-state plates with ballots. Gee, how did that happen?
Yeah.
You've got testimony of the same person witnessing the same person, bring multiple things in without an ID, without anything, and they just get counted.
When they sent those Republicans home in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and all those places, those ballots should all be thrown away. And there's no way they can be thrown away now because it's all mixed together. But
exactly.
That says fraud. And if it doesn't, why would they do it? That makes no sense, unless they were trying to cover something up. Yeah, this was well orchestrated, and unfortunately, the people we had in Washington, we continue to have in Washington, are weak. And even a lot of people in a lot of the states, I don't even know how much I respect Wendy Rogers anymore. She talks a good story, but what's going on there? If they can subpoena, Steve Bannon? you know, and stuff like
that's
that.
That's in Washington. Yeah.
Yes, but if they could do that, then why, you know, Arizona's been threatening to subpoena or whatever they were going to do to those. They weren't even election officials, those county, whoever they were, because they wouldn't cooperate. They wouldn't hand over information. Nothing's ever happened to any of those. So what is that telling anybody in this country? That we don't, that certain people, once again, are above the law.
Mm-hmm. Look at the choke points. I think Wendy's doing the best she can. I got a lot of respect for Wendy Rogers. You know, she had a letter. She called for disqualification. She's actually one of the most active of the state legislatures. But she can't move the Arizona State Senate by herself. They have to have a majority vote. You know, that's how it works. The real choke point in Arizona is the Attorney General, because the Attorney General has all the audit information, has all the results of the audit, has everything. Has everything to prosecute and send, you know, I think to prosecute those people involved, okay, and to say, yeah, this is a fraud. And at that point, the Arizona legislature would have no choice but to send in Trump electors or disqualify or decertify Brandon. Now, I think the state Senate can do it anyway, because the results of the audit were sufficient to prove that there's enough fraud there disqualify or decertify the Brandon electors. Okay. And here's the thing too, the fact that all those votes were mixed in, that's, you know, you don't have to find every fraudulent vote to prove fraud. All you have to do is prove fraud. So it doesn't matter how much fraud. In the same way, and I use this example all the time, you know, if you steal $20 from 7-Eleven at gunpoint, okay, you're not going to bankrupt the 7-Eleven. You don't have to steal enough money to put them out of business. In the same way, you don't have to steal enough votes to change the election. You can steal votes, still lose, and still be charged with vote fraud. Okay, in the same way, if you steal $20 from a 7-Eleven at gunpoint, you're going to jail for armed robbery. Okay, now is the 7-Eleven going to be fine if you stole $20? Yeah, because it's nothing. Crime's still the same. If you stole, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars from a 7-Eleven, took all their merchandise, took their safe, took everything else, and bankrupt that 7-Eleven, you're still going to jail for armed robbery. So it's not how much you steal, it's the fact that you stole. Same thing goes for elections. It's not how many votes you steal. It's the fact that you stole any. One vote is enough to prove vote fraud. And this stupid idea that Bill Barr, the Attorney General, brought in, you steal enough votes to change the election results, you're never going to know that. So he creates an impossible standard to prove because, as you said, rightly so, all the votes are mixed in. So that's the wrong standard. And this is how the judges get around a lot of stuff. They change the standards. So they say you have to have standing. And they say, well, you don't have standing, so you can't sue. You know, or when the Supreme Court refused to take the case of Texas, challenging the other states, saying those states with their fraudulent votes disenfranchised Texas voters. The Supreme Court was mandated to take that case by Constitution. They have violated the Constitution. That's high crimes and misdemeanors right there. Every one of those Supreme Court justices, except Alito and Thomas, the only people who wanted to take the case, should all be thrown off for bad behavior. That's what would happen if we were actually a republic and we followed the rules of the Constitution.
Right, no, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I got a bunch of points from the show. I wrote down some notes and things like that. We'll get to those as the show goes on. But let me just, before Cindy gets here, let me kind of summarize for those listening what I was talking about with Dave. All right. So the timeline is pretty much as we've explained already. So that Trump supporters were there to listen to a speech by Trump to rally the troops so they could then go to the Capitol and support, this is the key, support the constitutional challenge to the Biden electors that the governors and the secretaries of state were bringing in. Those states, those seven states with dual electors, Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Georgia, all the fraud states, the ones that have massive vote fraud that need to be audited. In fact, I think you should have an automatic audit every election, but that's just me, given what's going on now. But those states that are having the challenges, that are having the audits, either had them as Arizona had them, or they're proposed in these other states, and they better get their ass in gear and get going on that. Those states should have been challenged. They weren't. Why? Because of the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in. Why? To stop that challenge. Why? Because without the challenge, the members of the House and Senate could simply vote for Brandon. Now, why would they vote for Brandon? This is the big question, all right? This is the question that we don't know. This is the question because there was a blackout. And I've checked the congressional record on this. And the congressional record is sacred. In fact, it's interesting. One of the members of Congress put in the entire transcript of Joe Rogan and Dr. Robert Malone's podcast, put it in the congressional record. That way it can't be erased. I thought it was a brilliant move, quite honestly. All right. So the congressional record is sacred. You know, you can't touch it. This goes to the Library of Congress. This is the National Archives. You don't touch the congressional record. Once something's in there, it's in there forever. So it's not like you can scrub it off the internet. So they put that in. But the congressional record has a blind spot on January 6th. So here's what happened. Trump is still speaking. Started an hour late. Because he started, Cindy's on the line now, good. Okay, so let me just do this quick little summary here. And Cindy, you know, I'll get you on the line here in a second. You can jump in with us. So because Trump spoke, you know, got there an hour late, which is uncharacteristic. They usually expect Trump to be punctual. One time he's late, he actually saved, you know, the country by being an hour late. So the Trump supporters are at the Ellipse, which is, you know, the circular thing around the Washington Monument, right near the White House, 45-minute walk from the Capitol. The Capitol is doing their electoral challenge, I guess, about noon. That's when they start. So the doors open up, Capitol Hill Police and the D.C. Police, the Capitol Hill Police mostly, they open up the doors, they invite all their Black Lives Matter and Antifa and FBI, you know, instigators and a whole bunch of people paid off to dress like Trump supporters to walk into the Capitol. The whole sole purpose of that was to stop the challenge with the first state, Arizona. And they accomplished the mission. So eventually the Trump supporters get there. You know, they start walking through, and some really unfortunate things happen. There was a woman who was beaten to death outside the Capitol doors. I got to get her name again. Jean, I think we wrote it down yesterday. Victoria White.
Victoria White, I think.
Victoria White. So Victoria White's beaten to death outside. There was another man.
No. She was not beaten to death. She's still living. There's someone else that died.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find that person. But also, yeah. Greg. There's a comment on chat, and I figured it would probably be good for you to address it just because other people may be saying the same thing, or some people may be thinking the same thing.
Oh, okay. No, I can actually, that's a really good point. I'm going to make Cindy's line live, too. And then we'll continue this, and I'll see, because Cindy might have questions on this also. And I'm going to get Jonathan joining us at the top of the hour. I knew today was going to go fast. Okay, so this is a comment in the live chat. I think I'm pronouncing this Sirik414. So Sirik 414 is in New Jersey. I can read this. It's all public. It's on our live chat, so I'm not, you know, giving away any confidential information here. So it says, hello, I am in New Jersey, but I think the election was stolen. The 166, 620, I'm not sure that. Oh, the Arizona audit proved that the election wasn't stolen. Okay, I'm just adding a little bit here. Had there been reliable evidence, the courts would have heard it. Okay, two major points to correct. First of all, the Arizona audit did prove that the election was stolen. Okay, when you say the Arizona audit proves, you're not getting the full audit. What you're getting is the folks that did the count of all the votes. Now the votes include the fraudulent votes. So all the count did, it was a baseline. It was just to reaffirm what the count was. Okay, but since the count included the fraudulent votes, of course it came out for Biden. Okay, so the recount, if you recount the fraudulent votes, you're going to get the same result. All right. So all they proved was that the recount proved, the forensic audit of the recount proved that the original count, including the fraud votes, had Brandon win. Now, if you look at the rest of it, if you look at Dr. Shiva's report, if you look at Cyber Ninjas, if you look at the comparison of the signatures, if you look at the voter registrations, if you look at the canvas of people that when you had 200 people voting from the same address, if you look at the mail fraud, if you look at every other aspect of the audit, it proved conclusively that there was absolute fraud. Okay, so what you're believing and what you're repeating is only a very small part of the audit. That's the control. It's like those things that get the placebo in a medical trial, for example. So you're reporting on the placebo, but you're forgetting the actual trial. Okay, you're forgetting the actual audit. The second point: had there been reliable evidence, the courts would have heard it. Not necessarily. A lot of there's all kinds of reliable evidence out there. There's affidavits, you know, sworn under penalty of perjury. There's videotapes that you can't dispute. There's all kinds of stuff. There's plenty of evidence. The thing is, the courts are not looking at the evidence. They're refusing to even look at it. Well, that is an abrogation of their duties. They can't do that. Okay, they are duty bound by law, by oath, to support and defend the Constitution and the constitutional rights of those who bring challenges. Okay, so these challenges have been brought to the courts. The courts simply aren't hearing them. So the problem is not the evidence. The problem is the judges. The problem is that the judicial process is not going forward because the people who are duty bound, who swear an oath to the Constitution, are violating their oath, abrogating their duty, and refusing to look at the evidence that's sitting right in front of them. That's the problem. Cindy Cagle, Citizens for Medical Freedom. Good morning.
Good morning.
Caught me on a roll.
What a
Welcome to
what
January 6th, 1 year
been.
Later. Yeah. Oh, Sirik 414, thanks for commenting. I really appreciate it. And so keep commenting. If you dispute what I say, then let's keep hashing this out. I'm really glad to have you on here. Okay, back to you, Cindy. What's going on in medical? Do you want January 6th or do you want to talk medical stuff? Or both? I'm open.
Both is good to me. I can't believe it's been a year. What a year it's been.
Yeah.
I'm anxiously awaiting to hear what Jonathan has to say.
Yeah, we'll stick around for that. That's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
That's gonna be a good time.
Lots going on in the medical world.
So what are the challenges? What's going on with the mandates? I just heard that the Navy, 35 Navy SEALs, a judge just defended them saying that they can't be punished for these mandates, which are completely illegal. And the judge says something really interesting. I want you to comment on this, that it's something that we've been saying for a long time, too, that you do not give up your constitutional rights ever. You certainly don't give them up in the military. The federal government can't suddenly, the Brennan illegal administration can't suddenly say that we're going to mandate for the military and make them, you know, take this GMO shot. I'm getting a bit of echo. Are you looking on speaker or on phone, or do you have a computer on at this time? I'm getting a bit of echo on your line.
Oh, let me close down chat.
Yeah, so turn down the computer.
Yeah. Well, I've got my audio
That's
off
better.
On the computer.
Okay,
but
good.
I wanted to watch
I can't hear
the
it now.
Chat.
Okay.
You know, I'm pleasantly surprised with that ruling for the military, because I felt like they were the last to be winnable.
Oh, interesting.
You know, and maybe that's my naivety again. you know, my husband is a 26-year military retiree. So we lived the life for 26 years, and you know, everything I knew of him being in the military was you pretty much don't have a say in anything. You are the property of the government, and what they say goes. So they really
were. Well, that's what I understood for
a
large part, too, because, you know, you're under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And you know, if they order you to go, you go.
And it's very different.
I understand that. You know, you have to have that kind of situation. Otherwise, you know, if being deployed was an option, you know, or just quitting, it's not like a job, you know, so in that respect. But the question is the rights to your person.
Well, and
that's a different question.
That has been understood by him and I for his career, was that medically you don't really have a say.
Okay.
You know, pretty much. You know, anything that was commanded by your officer, you had to do. And, you know, we never questioned the religious side of it, but certainly from a medical standpoint. And on the flip side of that, you take something more than a Motrin as an aviator, and you're grounded. I mean, it was understood that you really avoided taking any type of medicine. Heck, it took him a year to get an exclusion to wear glasses. I mean, because he didn't have perfect vision. So that surprises me, and it's a pleasant surprise, but I wouldn't have thought to start at the military for a win. I really thought it would have been the civilian side. So we'll see how that plays out.
Go ahead, Jean.
Have you guys heard, I saw an article yesterday that the Mayo Clinic let go of, I think it was 1%, or it was maybe, I don't even know how many thousands of people, because they've got, I mean, the Mayo Clinic itself is gigantic in, you know, more than just Minnesota now, in Arizona and also Florida, but they let go of people, workers that weren't back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't even go into the commissary without a mask.
Well, I knew someone that worked on a military base, and he said you have to wear the mask outside and in your car even.
Oh, wow. So that's a big win for
Huge.
For the military. Yeah. We'll see how it plays out. But I was surprised.
Lawsuits, anything going on with those you can report? Against any of the vax mandates? Yeah.
You've got SCOTUS hearing arguments tomorrow with the OSHA mandate, which that goes into effect on Monday, that tyranny.
Interesting.
It'll be interesting to see how tomorrow goes. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought.
That's a lot on this show. Don't worry about it.
What else? You've got, regular session in the Florida legislature starting up on the 11th.
Okay.
And we've got those freedom of speech bills that need to be approved for these doctors. And it becomes more important every day that this stuff passes because, one of our own local doctors, Dr. Thorpe, he's a maternal fetal medicine. He's done some interviews lately that have been posted on social media talking about the dangers of the vaccine in pregnant women. And, our group is about to be shut down on Facebook for posting things like that, that they deem against the community standards. Now, it doesn't promote violence. I can't wrap my head around what community standards it's violating, except that it's putting out medical information that a pregnant woman should be able to hear, and because she's certainly hearing the other side that she needs to get vaccinated and to save her and her unborn child, it's necessary. But yet you've got fact checkers that aren't even medical doctors making the decision to remove that. And it's not just, punish you and slow your information. It's removing it from every possible corner of Facebook that they might get that information. So these doctors need to be able to speak. And
let me offer my solution. Let me offer my solution in English this time compared to last week. How's that? Remember we had a little bit of a confusion last week over Section 230?
Yes.
Okay. So,
and I'm
prepared.
You
ready this time?
Today.
Okay. Have you read it? Have you read my bill?
Portions.
Hey, listen, that's more than most people, so you're off to a good start. All right. So the problem is that set up this whole interactive computer service idea with social media and search engines. They let the people that provide the service, gave them the authority to police the service at the same time. Right, and what they said was, and let's get to the actual laws here. So, the most important sections are the bottom part of the bill. And the top part explains why you don't need that, don't need to have big tech do that because the obscenity laws already cover everything the big tech's already doing. But I'll save that for another time. That's where it gets confusing. All right. So, what Congress said was in the current Title 47, Section 230C, protection for Good Samaritan blocking and screening of offensive material. Okay, so big tech. They're not being characterized as publishers, okay? And the reason that's important is because if you're a publisher, it means you're also an editor. It means you're selecting what you're publishing, okay? New York Times is a publisher. They can pick stories or not. That's up to them. Now, if they pick stories that are libelous or slanderous, you can sue them. They're not immune from a lawsuit. So say New York Times has a banner headline. I've used this before. Donald Trump sleeps with fuzzy blue teddy bears. Okay. If Donald Trump does not sleep with fuzzy blue teddy bears, which I would tend to doubt, although it is a funny image, that's slanderous or libel. He can then sue the New York Times. They're not immune from that. Okay. So what they said was to big tech, to Facebook and Google, the search engines and social media, they said that you guys are immune from civil lawsuit because you're not publishers. You're not responsible for what people put on those sites, okay? Citizens for Medical Freedom, anybody else. You're not responsible, so you can't be sued for that. And then they did the stupidest thing possible. They said, but, you know, we're going to make you the police, okay? We're going to give you a good faith ability. And here's what they said. And this is, for those of you, the legislative nerds out there like me, Title 47, Section 230, C2A, which says, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be held liable on account of, A, any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, I love these words, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable. Whether or not such material is constitutionally protected or, and then they go to the next part, but that's it. So in other words, not only are they immune from a lawsuit, they're the good faith police. Okay, let's go through. Are you with me so far? Do you have any questions?
I am. I guess where I'm having trouble understanding the caveat is if they're deciding what information is acceptable, especially in a medical forum, and they're not medical doctors, how are they not liable for the damage that might be caused by people not hearing both sides?
Okay. It's actually a little bit, you're on the right track, but I'm gonna make it a little bit broader. It's not just medical. What they're doing is acting as publishers. Yet they're immune from the lawsuit.
Okay, that's how I see it.
Okay. So here's the contradiction, Section 230. So you can either have it one of two ways, but you can't have it both. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Okay. This is a bill that gives them the ability to have their cake and eat it too. Okay. So in other words, if you're a publisher and you're discriminating over what goes into your publication, okay, then you can be held liable for that. But you still have the ability to edit, discriminate, set standards, do anything you want. That's what a publisher does.
Which is what they're doing.
Which is what they're doing. However, they also have immunity as if they were not a publisher.
Mm.
Oh.
And therein lies the question. Why is no one challenging that?
I am. You know, all it would take, here's the crazy part. I mean, I've already solved this one. And I know that sounds hopelessly arrogant, and Jean's probably rolling her eyes already. But it's true.
Well, I'm with Jean today because we don't have time for the voting process on this.
You don't have to. Just share the bill.
In the making.
Share the bill with your lawyer. Share the bill with media. Call other talk shows. Share the bill with your friends. Share the bill. Just send it to Congress. And if enough people do that, sooner or later, it's going to hit the national news.
Well,
because
I'm wondering
so
why
simple.
No one's challenging it. We've had
well,
this has been in existence for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are challenging it, but they're not challenging it the right way. So the two current thoughts in Congress are either antitrust or regulation. So you remember when Congress was talking about regulations, who did Congress haul before them? Two fake Facebook whistleblowers. Remember those two? A couple of women?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One that looked like Matt Gaetz. One person commented, this could be Matt Gaetz's sister. She actually does look like him. It's hysterical. She looks like the blonde version of Matt Gaetz. You know, so it was hysterical. But anyway, but the point is they had two fake whistleblowers. And, of course, what happened from those hearings? Nothing.
Nothing.
See, the Democrats
and then it became a silent
Congress.
Issue. But
right.
That's and I'm not even looking at it from the congressional change. I'm looking at it from why have people not sued them?
They can't. They've got liability protection. They're immune from liability. From Title 47, Section 230, Part C1, treatment of publisher
but
or speaker.
They're breaking that rule by what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So
see this law
can't you sue them?
No, you have to change the law. Because the law as it says now that they are treated they have the ability of a publisher to control what goes on to their social media sites. but they also have the immunity of not being a publisher. See, this is a flawed law. This law is, to put in the vernacular, effed up. Okay? So, to put it very simply, this law is wrong. And so the simple solution, and this is what I'm finding so fascinating about writing legislation, because I'm still fairly new to this myself, okay? But the thing that I'm finding is that the actual solutions are so deceptively simple. The hard part is getting the word out. But the actual solutions in legislation, the changing the language of the law, is actually very simple. Once you know where to look, once you know where the problem is, once you isolate the very small sentence, it's usually like one or two sentences control the world. Okay, it's like vaccine product liability. All right, there's one section of one part of one codicil of one, you know, subpart A236 code, you know, star, you know, whistle mark, hashtag something or other, okay, that says vaccine manufacturers shall not be held civilly liable for their products. Okay.
Well, so yeah, that's very simple, but breaking the cycle of what we currently have is going to take years.
No, it's not. It's going to take millions of people. It's not going to take years. It actually could happen. Most things in legislation, they take years to happen, but once they start happening, they happen very quickly. You look at the Eastern European nations, okay, that threw off their communist dictators, and in the case of Romania, they put them against the wall and killed them. People shot them. You know, the Ceausescus? They're executed. That happened very quickly. That happened over the course of, I think, a weekend, where they went from a communist dictatorship to a free country. Václav Havel, the Czech Republic.
People on the sidewalk to push back about losing their job for not getting a vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, see, Americans aren't used to resisting. That's the problem.
No.
It's comfy. All right, so now we'll see. Now how far – well, and look how far Americans have been willing to be pushed. They've been willing to be pushed to lose their businesses, lose their family fortunes, make their kids wear masks. They've been pushed into online learning. They've been pushed into vaccine passports. They've been pushed into all kinds of things, and they're willingly doing it. Enough people are willingly doing it that it's happening. So all that it takes for a dictatorship to win is for people not to resist.
It's very easy to write what would change things, but when you have a system in place that is large organizations bribing, essentially, our legislators to...
Yeah, they're paying for them. Yep.
Yeah, how do we compete with that? Because you and me and 10 other people are losing.
No. See, this is the grand experiment, Cindy. This is what we don't know. So what we're doing here at Action Real has never been done before. So that's part of the problem. People don't understand what we're doing, and they don't realize the potential of it because they've never seen it. Well, in order to see it, we have to make it happen. In order to make it happen, you know, we have to change a few things. Let me just check with our live chat for a bit. So, Sirik 414, I don't want to let you think I'm not addressing your question. So the next point, don't go away, Cindy. We've got a lot more to talk about. So Sirik said, you're going to have a hard time selling 60 judges refuse to look at the evidence. Okay, well, that's actually what happened. 60 judges refused to look at the evidence. I don't have to sell you on that. That's a fact. That's what happened. Okay. So look at the court records. Look at the actual transcripts. Look what the judges said. They won't look at the evidence. Okay. That's what's going on. All right. Let's get back to this law here. Because if you understand that there's a contradiction in the law in Section 230 that Facebook, let's just use Facebook, all right, because they're probably the biggest offenders out there. They can call themselves Meta as much as they want. It's still Facebook, which actually came from LifeLog, which was a CIA creation, by the way, to track everybody's life. It's kind of funny how that works.
Oh.
All right. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll talk about that another day. Yeah. Maybe we'll do that today, too. Who knows? I keep myself open. All right. So Facebook is acting as a publisher, deciding what content goes on their site, and also as an immune provider of a social media service so that people can post whatever they want and sell us advertising based on our personal information. Okay, so that's the deal. So the deal is we get to so the way it's supposed to work is we can post whatever we want, okay, and they can't say anything about it. Just like on the phone lines, you know, AT&T, they didn't care what you said on the phone line, even if it was criminal. They just wanted you to pay your rent on the phone equipment. That was their interest. So and that's what we need for social media. So social media can't care what we post on there. You know, we're buying their service by providing our personal information so they can sell that to marketing people who can advertise to us more directly. That's the deal. That's the deal we make. That's how we pay for that service. We're paying for Facebook, by the way, with personal information.
Oh, yeah, we're paying dearly.
Okay, so this isn't a free service, all right? So that's how it works. So we are paying customers of Facebook. And the fact that it'd be like a company saying, it'd be like, you know, you pay a company for a product and then they refuse to give it to you. Can you imagine?
Well, and that, and I do, you know, I try and look at the people that say, okay, well, you don't have to use their service. They're providing a service. They're a private company. They
nope, 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 nope. I got an argument for that,
yeah,
too. Go ahead.
And that's what I say.
Yep. All right, here's the counter argument to that. All right. They are part of the information superhighway. They are part of the infrastructure. There are businesses, including mine, and most likely yours with your Facebook page, that use this for commerce. They are interfering in interstate commerce in the same way that Black Americans were banned from going to restaurants and hotels. Therefore, they couldn't travel and engage in interstate commerce on the state highways and the federal highways, the actual roadways, okay? They couldn't drive. You know, Black Americans were banned from segregation, right? Well, this is intellectual segregation. So think of it that way. We are being banned from the information superhighway, which is every bit as vital today as the interstate highways were back in the 60s, okay? We are being banned from engaging in interstate commerce, which they can't do. You can't block access to the marketplace, in this case, the marketplace of ideas, by censoring, by restricting, by shadow banning, by banning outright. They can't do any of that stuff because that they are refusing to let us engage. They are blocking us from engaging in interstate commerce, and that they can't do. We have a right to life, liberty, property, the pursuit of happiness, commerce. We have a right not to have our stuff seized for no reason. They are seizing our information. They are seizing our businesses. My business, Action Radio, has been drastically limited in audience by big tech. I am a victim of big tech. They have stopped my ability to engage in interstate commerce in this country by banning and restricting me ever since I started talking about COVID being, the pandemic being a hoax, that it actually was just a regular virus that would have been gone in about 10 weeks.
Well,
ever since I did that 2 years ago. Yeah, go ahead.
I look at it from a medical standpoint where the government is using it very effectively to push, mm-hmm. you know, medical decisions. Yet they're silencing another side of medical opinions that, you know, are truly impacting people's lives based on the information that they have access to.
Yeah. Did you hear our show yesterday, or did you get that article from the American Association of Physicians? I've forgotten their exact title, on how the breakdown of how hospitals and doctors are making about $100,000 per COVID death in their hospitals if they go through the remdesivir, ventilator, death march?
I haven't seen that yours, but yes, I've seen it over the last year, the financial incentives for the hospital.
Right.
Yeah.
So the government is paying for their program. This is socialized medicine. This is government medicine. So part of government medicine involves government propaganda. Government propaganda is being enforced through big tech.
Yeah.
So the reason that Congress hasn't touched this is because they've been paid not to. And they've been told not to. And there are globalists in charge of Congress. Here's the cabal. So you've got Congress, you've got big tech, you've got big pharma, and you've got big health bureaucracy. And that would be FDA, NIH, CDC. Okay? That's the cabal that is forcing a socialized medicine vaccine program onto everybody to the exclusion of the cures that we all know work.
So that's where I say... I challenge you to say it's very easy to change it by writing new law. Well, if you've got the roadblocks in place by these people that are the gateway to changing the law, we're losing.
Well, see, that's the hard part. The easy part is writing the law. The hard part is getting it in the public eye because I'm being censored. So it's going to require
some... the public eye. It's getting it past the gatekeepers.
Okay.
It's getting
now, here's
past
how you do
Congress.
That.
It's getting back our Florida, getting past our Florida legislator.
Right. So what we need is more votes than they have power and money. And I don't know where that point is, but that's the point. If we get enough, say Trump gets behind this bill, you know, it gives me $1 million to market it.
Are we going back to relying on Trump to save the world?
No, I'm not relying on anybody. But what I'm saying is that's you know, or say one of these big foundations, say Heritage, the Hoover Institute, Citizens for Limited Taxation, you know, a few big folks like, you know, let's say Sebastian Gorka, Mark Levin, and any other big talk show host take this on and make this Joe Rogan. Say Joe Rogan has me on his show one day, all right, and says, I'm going to get behind you, and I've got 60 million listeners, all right? Well, that's almost the entire that's Brandon's vote, allegedly, you know, to Trump's 80 million, okay? So 60 million listeners would have a huge impact. If those listeners started becoming citizen legislators, even a partial amount did. I mean, CNN only has between half and three quarters of a million listeners, tops, or viewers. Look at all the impact they
have. As my husband would say, until you correct the corruption in voting, it doesn't matter how many votes we get.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's part of the challenge.
Part of the cabal.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that was what we dealt with in the first half hour with Dave, the whole idea of January 6th. But I want to get this straight, because once you understand this, you'll understand, you know, the entire potential of what we're doing here. So don't think about what can't be done. I would say concentrate on what can be done. And what we need to do is to get enough people, enough votes, and find that point where politicians value the votes they're going to get more than the dollars they're going to lose.
I hate to be a pessimist. This is years in the making, Greg.
It's already here.
And just look at what's happened in a year from January 6th. I can't imagine what our country is going to look like in the time it's going to take to make those types of changes.
Okay. Well, let's start small. If you can share my bill, my Section 230 correction, with the you know, anybody you know, lawyers, doctors, anybody.
Yeah.
Because I know there are lawyers working on these lawsuits to stop the mandates. Share it with them. They're going to want the open communication too. They're going to be able to broadcast the results of their lawsuits and things like that. Share it with them. Okay. But you don't need lawyers to do this. See, what I'm doing is completely constitutional, completely legal. And the only thing that's stopping us is the money and the power and the corruption.
Gatekeepers.
The gatekeepers, exactly. Okay, so you be a gate opener. Do you like that? Gate opener.
I do, but I don't see it effective. Yeah.
Okay, well, then it's not going to work. I mean,
I'm feeling defeated today, I guess.
Okay, but if you feel defeated, then it's not going to work. Okay, if enough people feel defeated, nothing's going to happen. So what I need to do is give you a verbal, you know, butt kicking and say, come on, Cindy. Of course this will work. Okay, so don't give up until you've at least tried.
Oh, my gosh, I've spent the last year trying.
Oh, I know you have. Oh, no, listen, the work you're doing is incredible. I'm not saying anything against that, but I'm talking just as far as legislation. Get the bill out there, see what happens. Yeah, okay, no, you're doing fine. And I understand this is tough, or just give me the contacts. I'll send it to him myself. All right, so let's the last action, just to sort of sum this up, what my bill does is it still keeps the internet providers, social media and search engines, as immune from civil lawsuits so long as they don't touch anything post on their sites. So that's the difference.
Yeah, very easy fix.
It's very easy. So you take away the good faith, you take away the, because you look at everything that they have in law, and you can match stuff to what they're doing. Okay, so good faith, well, they're going to do it. Restrict access. Well, there's your censorship, all right? Or availability. Well, there's people being kicked off. Or material that a provider or user considers to be, you know, whatever they consider it to be. They can block it. They can block it for whatever reason they want, because they can say it was done in good faith. And they can block anything that they think is otherwise objectionable. In other words, fake news. What they consider fake news is objectionable to them, right? So they are fully within the law to ban anything that they consider, of course, we know it's not true, they consider fake news. And what's fake news? Anything that goes against their narrative and their objectives. So what's really objectionable are their objectives. Okay. But they have the ability in law to do exactly what they're doing. They're not breaking the law by censoring, by banning, by doing all that, by kicking people off, kicking Marjorie Taylor Greene off Twitter. They're going by Section 230, Title 47, Section 230, Section C2A, for you nerds out there. They're going by the law. So the only way you're going to stop it is to change the law. And the law change is very simple. I may quote my new Section C1, treatment of publisher or speaker. No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as a publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. So there's the liability protection. All right. Well, actually, that's calling in publishers. Here's the liability protection, Section 2A. No provider of interactive computer services shall be held liable for any action, interaction, anything post, or any content from any user of interactive computer services. So you and I are the users, Facebook, Google, those are the providers. Okay. So there's the liability guarantee. No provider of interactive computer services shall be held liable. Okay. So they're off the hook. There's no liability for them. All right. Now, here's the catch. Part B. Any infringement, interaction, or interference, no matter how minuscule, with the actions, interactions, postings, or content of any user of interactive computer services by any interactive computer, by any provider of interactive computer services shall void, here's the key, shall void and revoke civil liability protection from that provider. So what I did was I changed.
In the current law that mm-hmm. with that caveat that if they violate the protection of being not being considered a publisher, mm-hmm. there's no consequences.
Nope. Now, in fact, they have a good faith exemption. That's what the Good Samaritan Clause is, the good faith exemption that they can do whatever they want as long as it's in good faith for anything they find otherwise objectionable.
Why did they need the protection of not being considered a publisher?
So they couldn't be sued for what somebody put on that they didn't have control over. Now, there are things mm-hmm. that people post that are illegal. Child pornography is the most blatant and disgusting example, okay? But there's already laws against that. See, the thing is, the obscenity laws, the child pornography laws, those laws prevent really objectionable material, the lewd, lascivious, graphically violent, the things that they're talking about in that good faith exemption, they're already covered by law. There was no reason to give that power to big tech. I think they bought it, just like the vaccine manufacturers bought immunity from liability for the vaccines. They bought these things, okay? So this is where lawyers come in and weasel word these laws in ways that benefit their clients. In other words, this is special interest legislation. This is a protection of big tech so that they can censor, ban, shadow ban, kick off, restrict, do anything they want, and they can say, well, we just did it in good faith, and we found that material otherwise objectionable. The law says we can do that, and they're absolutely right. The law does say they can do that. So the answer very simply is to take away that good faith, you know, otherwise objectionable power, and that's what I did in my bill. And I said very simply, they still have their liability protection. They are not responsible for anything anybody posts. The people that are responsible is law enforcement, Department of Justice, those folks. They're responsible for what's posted in the same way that they're responsible for any other place that people might post child pornography, excessively violent, disgusting, murder scenes, things like, you know, whatever the obscenity laws cover and the child porn laws cover. Okay? So those things are already illegal. You don't have to make them illegal twice. So there's no reason for big tech to have that power because that power already exists in law enforcement. And that's where it should be. Right? Law enforcement is literally law enforcement. They should be enforcing the laws. Big tech is not law enforcement. So they shouldn't have law enforcement power. Make sense?
They're not doctors either. They shouldn't have doctor power.
Yeah, they shouldn't be practicing medicine without a license by denying.
Right.
In fact, there's your lawsuit. There's your lawsuit right there. The lawyer, the fact that big tech has restricted and killed hundreds of thousands of people in this country by restricting access to life-saving information makes them guilty of mass murder.
That's what I was saying. That's the very question I've been posing to lawyers.
You're absolutely right. Well, Jonathan's on the line now, too. I'm going to get him in just a second. I want to play his theme because it's really cool. We haven't done it for a while. But let me just be really clear on how you fix Section 230. One, you maintain that these people are not publishers. They are not liable for anything that's posted. And two, if they touch in any way, infringe in any way on anything that is posted, they lose their liability protection. Simple enough?
Yeah.
Okay. Share my bill. Away we go. Easy peasy. Seeker, Sirik 4414, I'll get you in just a little bit. I want to play Jonathan's very cool theme, and then we'll get to the rest of the show on what happened January 6th and what should happen this January 6th. I'll be right back. It probably started with an episode of Perry Mason many years ago, that yearning to understand the law so that you can help people who don't understand the law. The arguments, the debates, the mental trial beyond the actual trial, all the while trying to do the best you can for your client. he walks the halls of justice. Pictures on the wall of great minds who advanced the law. He walks not in the black robes of the judge, but the suit and tie of the attorney. Known as counselor, lawyer, or any number of other names, and after years of hard work, these are the people accepted to the bar and allowed to practice law, especially at trial. For it is at trial, many times, that the great decisions of our society are realized. It's where the laws get tested. It's where juries have lost their power to judge the laws and not just the facts. It's where judges make up their own law, especially through interpretations. But if you are ever in trouble, your attorney can be your best friend. We are privileged at Action Radio to have one of those practitioners of the law, someone who knows the Constitution, who knows about due process, who takes the rights of the individual as sacred and will fight for them with all he's got. It is at this time every week that we immerse ourselves in the law. So join us in the law as we go to the Action Radio Legal Report with Jonathan Mosley. And just before we do that, I want to make a quick comment here to Sirik414 on live chat. It says, you're assuming the majority of people agree with you on your bills. Well, I don't assume that at all. I have to teach them about it first. And so I think the majority of people will agree with me on my bills and us on our bills and Jonathan on his bill and everybody else who writes for Action Radio writes bills, because we are creating bills that increase your freedom. So if you're against our bills, you're probably against freedom. Because we are not special interests. All bills are written as the Constitution wanted, you know, to promote the general welfare. In other words, the welfare of everybody, okay? And not in terms of welfare payments, but in terms of welfare, in other words, our general benefit, you know, and our general benefit is benefited by freedom. So our bills create more freedom. And I just went over Section 230. That bill that I wrote, you know, will give us more freedom, freedom from the oppression of censorship. That's a good thing. So if anybody doesn't agree with it, it's probably because they haven't heard it yet. That's the only thing I can think of. All right, Jonathan. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming a little bit early. I appreciate it. We've got Cindy Cagle still on the line from Citizens for Medical Freedom. Jean's still here. Josie's going to join us 20, 25 minutes or so. And you're one of our heroes for calling in last January 6th at the Capitol. So I'm just going to let you go. You know, we've got a lot of things to cover. We can start there or start wherever you want, and let's get into it. No. Good morning, sir.
Well, I know that you
Yeah, you're on.
Can you hear me?
Yep, absolutely.
So I know you love playing that segment, but I didn't mean to the intro. You know, I didn't mean to call in early to cut anybody else off.
No, you didn't. No. This is open time. Bill Fecky's going to take this time back at some point, but he's not here yet. So don't worry about it. This is your time.
All right. Well,
besides, I'm the boss. I can do it.
Of course, in D.C. we're having. You know, I guess it is appropriate because in D.C. we're having a. You know, an orgy of celebration about January 6th by the Democrats. They're going to have readings by blatantly
Karl Marx,
notoriously left wing presidential historians like what's her name, Goodwin. Going to have
Doris Goodwin.
Yes, Doris Goodwin. You know, and the other guy who's like always been. I can't believe it. I'm so late. We actually have sun shining here, although it's been snowy for we've been buried in here in D.C.
The global warming's falling all around D.C. right now. It's kind of funny.
well, it is. You know that here, just to ramble a bit, because I am kind of waking up. I don't know why I'm this late. That there were massive numbers of cars on the interstate highway just south of Washington D.C. where people spent 16 hours. Trapped in their cars on the major interstates
because of the snow.
And you know, that's sort of the accomplishment level of our government. That's Governor Northam, the outgoing Democrat here.
Governor and Blackface.
Exactly. So we're really proud.
Go ahead, Gene.
There's still people without power there, which is a travesty too in this cold weather. I know someone that had to leave his house because he ran out of other ways to heat his house because there's no electric. And you think being so close to D.C., that would be unacceptable. But
how about the electric cars? Are there any breakdowns in the freeways of electric cars? Because I know California has restricted the charging of electric cars. So they mandate that people drive them and they take away the power. It's a perfect socialist state. Have they? I mean, I'm laughing, but it's not funny, but it is funny. It's funny because it's so stupid.
I haven't checked into that. Of course, when this happens in D.C., the number one problem, of course, they didn't, I mean, there's no excuse for not plowing, and they waited too long to plow. But the other thing is that once the highway is crowded,
uh-huh.
People abandon their cars, then nobody else can move, including the snowplows.
Where do they
the
go?
Plow, the little, I don't know. I mean, they have to. I mean, they have to walk.
Just leave the cars on the freeway.
Yeah.
Oh,
that happened a decade ago. People just abandoned their cars, and took me 7 hours to take a trip that would normally take about 45 minutes, to get home that day.
Wow.
But instead of worrying about like whether government works, today is the big festival of January 6th, in which the Democrats are, they'll probably be jugglers and clowns and balloons and
they're still in power.
Like,
they're still in power. It works.
And they think this is their best chance, their best hope. So they're trying to make a huge thing about it. The Attorney General of the United States yesterday gave an absolutely appalling speech. Appalling because he's in charge of the Department of Justice, who's prosecuting 700 people, about 500 of which have not yet gone to trial.
This is
so
a year later.
Everyone would scream about how Trump is interfering with justice, or if he said something, he can't do that. He's going to interfere with the various investigations or all those kinds of things. But here's what's happening on the back of the prosecutors. People who are waiting for trial. What's that?
Yeah. I was going to say you cut out there for a second.
And they're going to have.
I want to hold you up just for a second on January 6th, because Cindy, I don't know if you can stick around for a bit, but I know she had a question for you.
Sure, go ahead.
Because we got the rest of the show to do January 6th, but I want to hear in the detail about the folks that are in the DC gulag. But Cindy, did you want to ask a question? Like I said, I don't know how much time you have left, or if you can stick around for a while.
It was just, it's a legal question about why these doctors that are being censored through big tech are not able to sue them based on the fact that Facebook is essentially practicing medicine by choosing which doctors they allow to put forth information to make medical decisions on. And nobody's touching it.
Yeah, they're banning the early treatment information.
This is a different angle than, tech. And again, it's really all about the hypocrisy throughout a system, because in normal things, Section 230 would be interpreted. A judge would look at it and say, "Yeah, that has nothing to do with Section 230." They're not being sued because they took down child pornography or something. They're being sued, like you said, for something completely different. And any normal judge in a normal circumstance would err on the side of you suing there. But like everything else, that left wing, they would look at Section 230, which clearly doesn't say that you can't sue for that, and they would just find two numbers and emanations and things and say, well, no, it's kind of like Section 230, so we're gonna bar the thing. Then you have to find, because we do have to realize, and I know it's. It sounds like a cop-out, but it's really true that socialists from the 1930s and people have read in Congress, have been, read their writings, have set out to corrupt the legal schools, to corrupt the lawyers and the judges, because they know that this is one of the levers of power. And, the normal people, honest people, have just been fat, dumb, and happy. And think, that'll never happen. That's everything's fine. So if you were talking about any other issue, there would be ads up on TV for law firms, soliciting clients, and they would be enthusiastic about it, and judges would let them do it.
If you've been injured, there'd be an ad like, if you've been injured by Facebook, Google, or Twitter or Instagram, you know, you may have a claim. Call the, you know, call the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe, and let's see if we can help you. That kind of thing? Would they do that? Wouldn't that be great?
I went up to, you know, for Christmas, I went up to Massachusetts for my, to see my brother. And we don't have a lot of billboards around here.
Uh-huh.
But I must have passed 30 billboards for law firms. And, you know, why wouldn't they be lining up for something like this?
Yeah.
There is no good reason. But I think that, you know, that my father was a doctor, and the more I think about it, it really burns my toes that, you know, everybody's giving you medical advice from teenage, you know, singers to influencers to, you know, Hollywood celebrities and all the, and government politicians are all giving you medical
advice.
President
of the United States.
What's that?
The president telling an average citizen to tell Aaron Rodgers to get a vaccine.
Yeah, you can't call Brandon the president on this show. We just
oh, sorry.
He's still under ongoing investigation and audit. So he's not. And besides, the January 6th, and this is one of the biggest things about January 6th, the January 6th constitutional challenge was never finished. It got started with Arizona, and then it got disrupted by the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in. So you can call him Brandon. That sounds good. Let's go, Brandon. I'm sorry, Cindy. Go ahead.
But I think, you know, sometimes.
Jonathan. Yeah.
It's like there used to be a law called the Independent Counsel Law, and which is kind of like what Mueller was not protected by that law, but it was very similar. But this is an actual hardcore law, and the only reason the Democrats let it expire at the end of its term is because Republicans started using it against Democrats. So suddenly it wasn't so fun anymore, and. You know, when you talk about, if you just keep talking the drumbeat that, you know, this is practicing medicine without a license, you know, eventually they may sort of slink, you know, out into the shadows because they realize you're right and it sounds real bad and the public's not going to like it anymore. And it's already, people already believe that there's something fundamentally wrong with this. Because with all this push, people are not listening. And, I mean, it wouldn't – I mean, in the fascism – to use a Star Wars analogy, you know, the fascism runs deep with this one. You know, it doesn't take a genius to understand that the more you berate people, the more they're going to resist. And yet that's just not within the DNA of the Democrats. They just can't – if you sat and had a policy conference and explained it to them, they go, yep. And they walk out the door and still just do the same thing because their instinct is fascist, and they just can't avoid it. But, so people are already not listening. You know, they already know. But if you explain to them why, more and more, then it, you know, I think it is building momentum. And so, you know, we'll see. You know, I think it is awkward, like Donald Trump always wanted to take credit for helping develop the vaccine. And recently he was, you know, he was coming out in an interview and saying that you should take the vaccine. There's nothing wrong with it, et cetera, et cetera.
See, this is my problem.
You know, I assume.
This is my big problem with Trump. I mean, Trump is under a delusion. He's been horribly lied to. You know, look at the folks that there was some Dr. Robert somebody, I forgot, or Robert somebody who served in the White House, but along with Peter Navarro, Zelenko, who's for the show, told Trump, well, Zelenko was the one who told Trump about hydroxychloroquine, which he took, and I think he stopped taking it, and that's when he got COVID. And that was later on in the fall. He had the monoclonal antibodies, the Regeneron, things like that. But you look at Trump, he still believes in the Neil Ferguson that came out of the Imperial College in England that said that 200,000 British subjects were going to die and 2 million Americans were going to die of COVID. And Trump thinks, well, you know, 800,000 or so have died, you know, from and with, mostly with, 95% with, you know, 5% from. And he thinks, well, look, I saved all those people up to 2 million. You know, we lost 800,000, but I saved 1.2 million. Because that was the projection. So he's still going with the false projection. He still thinks ventilators work. You know, Josie reports from a nurse that 99% of the people put on ventilators die. Cindy, I'm sure you've got an estimate too. But I've heard 97%. But there's $100,000 that goes to every patient that goes, and this includes the coroners, to put COVID on the death certificate. that goes from the initial, from not getting early treatment, okay, to your PCR test, they make money. They make money on a COVID diagnosis. They make money, a huge amount of money on remdesivir, 20% bonus. They make money if you get put on a ventilator. They make money if death is more profitable than life. They make $100,000, you know, all the way through the coroners from the Center for Medicare systems funding. So there's a whole cabal funding the death of hundreds of thousands of Americans. You want to talk about socialized medicine gone nuts? This is socialized medicine gone nuts. You know, and that's what we're up against. And what Cindy's talking about is having people, you know, get the word out that early treatment works. But Trump is still under that delusion. He, you know, he could have vetoed that or done something about that system when he was in office, about paying people hospitals upwards of $100,000 for basically killing people with their remdesivir ventilator walk of death.
Peter Navarro was saying on, you know, Steve Bannon just a day or two ago, mm-hmm. that, you know, about what was going on behind the scenes. And in
I want him on the show. I really want to get Navarro on the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's kind of I guess he has sort of a book out, but he, you know, the report has been out there for a long time. But he might do that. But the thing is, he was explaining that behind the scenes, mm-hmm. it was, you know, an all of the above plan. The plan was never to, you know, it was. You know, to slow down, it was therapeutics, it was everything. It was, it was, you know, all of those common sense things that he says that was on the, you know, that literally on the table, on the mm-hmm. conference table.
How did Fauci take over? do you say how Dr. Fascist co-opted the whole system? I think it was the Obama pandemic playbook that was given to Trump that he summarily tossed, but Dr. Fascist followed it and basically took over the presidency with the White House commission, the coronavirus commission. I mean, Trump was on the sidelines from then on, and he's been on the sidelines ever since.
I mean, I think Peter Navarro agrees with that, but I don't know if he's discussed how Fauci got in there. But, you know, Fauci spent decades, like certain other people, BSing people, giving them gobbledygooks. Yeah, but and he's used to the idea that when you throw scientism mumbo jumbo at them, that other civil servants and politicians will just sort of back off. But I would like to hear Peter Navarro and other people who were in the room have to say about 60 million
hydroxychloroquine tablets he was going to distribute nationwide back in March of 2020. This thing would have been over in about 2 or 3 weeks. Cindy, did you hear about that?
Yeah.
Do you know about that?
No, this is the first I'm hearing about it.
Yeah. Barrow talked about it. This is why I want him on the show. He would love our bills. I'll tell you right now, he would love our bills. He just would.
But look at it. What I want to just say is look at it from Trump's perspective.
Okay.
Which I don't know, and we're hearing more about what was really going on inside. But I mean, imagine this. He clears the regulatory hurdles. He takes the risk by pre-funding the vaccines and trying to bring everybody together and make things work. Mm-hmm. He's going to assume that, well, certainly these companies are going to do a good job, right? Certainly they have...
Well, he believes in big business. Yeah.
Well, he does, but you think that... I mean, would you imagine that if you basically bought the vaccine in advance,
mm-hmm.
that you're going to assume the best of these vaccine manufacturers?
I wouldn't. Pfizer...
Swap something together.
Doesn't Pfizer... Isn't Pfizer the worst corporation in the
world? Oh, they have, yeah.
Don't they have billions upon billions of dollars of fines that have been assessed against Pfizer? I wouldn't trust them for anything. They're part of, and this is something I just met with the other day, this is government health care. This is socialized medicine. This is paying people, you know, for death. they're paying people to follow a specific program rather than follow the medicine or the actual science.
But when Trump was launching Operation Warp Speed,
right.
He didn't know, you know, the technical details of what these guys were going to do or not do. He's saying, industry, step up and solve that. He, mm-hmm. you know, he had no idea. Like you said, you were talking about the people who are dying, and mm-hmm. they're backed by interest groups and people who think that we need fewer people on the planet. So lo and behold, you know, people are dying. You know,
I see this as a marketing campaign to make money. I don't see this as a genocidal campaign to kill off, you know, millions of people, because if you kill off millions of people, then you can't make money off them. And I think the multiple boost shots prove that this is really about money. This is not about mass death, because the more people there are, the more people they can control. The more people they can move to different places in the world to disrupt the country. I don't see this as genocidal at all. I think this is purely power and money and greed, and it's socialized medicine. It's fascism. It's the purest form of fascism. You've got a uniting of the corporate through big tech and big pharma, and you've got the government through big health, which is, you know, the NIH, CDC, and FDA. I want to take quick comments on this. We got Josie on the line, and Josie's brought somebody with her, apparently, so we're going to have some fun today. This is going to be kind of cool. So, Cindy, then Jonathan, Jean, if you have a comment, and then we're going to get to Josie.
I think, you know, I extend a lot of grace to President Trump when he was in office and was dealing with, you know, what was a novel pandemic. But what I'm having a hard time swallowing is his recent comments, standing by, you know, what was put in place to date. And we know so much more than we did, you know, back then. To me, it's baffling that he's pushing, you know, getting the vaccine, embracing the vaccine, getting your boosters. He'd be better off to say nothing and stay with the narrative, we didn't know what we were working with back then.
But here's the thing, though. Here's the scariest part of this, is that the vaccines were invented years ago. Moderna was started in 2010 for the sole purpose of creating messenger RNA vaccines. So those things were already – he didn't create it with warp speed. People think, oh, yeah, we created it in a year. You can't do that with a vaccine. This thing was started 10 years ago. It takes 10 years to create a vaccine. And these aren't even vaccines.
I have to put myself in his position, and he was in a very delicate situation. He certainly didn't want to – appear to be, you know, killing off half the nation by not listening to, you know, some of the people that were giving him bad information. So, you know, I don't take the situation he was in lightly, but his recent comments are very concerning.
Okay. Yeah, no, he's not fit to be president until he gets his lies straightened out. Let's get Josie. Oh, Josie, good morning. Thanks for calling in today. I know you're normally on Tuesday, but this is such
a special
day. Yeah.
Yes, it is. January the 6th, a big day.
Yep.
I don't know if my guest is on, but this is a great surprise. And we have Cowboys for Trump. His name is Coy Griffith. And he should be on the line right now.
He is.
I'm
is
on. I don't know if y'all can hear me or not.
Yeah, you're on.
Yes.
You're live.
Hey, Josie. How are you?
Good morning, chico. ¿Qué pasa? How are you?
Good morning. No pasa nada. We're good, good, good. Yeah. Everything.
Thank
how do you spell
first
name?
Thank you for coming.
In the great state of New Mexico. Absolutely.
Right.
Yes. So my friend Greg, he is Action Radio, like I've been sharing with you before.
Sure.
And
mm-hmm.
he's glad to have you and everybody on the radio. And we have Jonathan Mosley. He's one of our lawyers also, and I don't know if you're familiar with him too. So we have everybody on right now. So I would like
we appreciate all
like
the great work that's been done in Florida.
Yes, and I would like for you, I know you don't have a lot of time this morning, but I would like for you to share with us your experience in D.C., and I know it's a long one, but
absolutely.
Do the best you can, okay? And
I've got a few different different interviews scheduled through the day. You know, of course, this is a huge day for so many of us that were impacted by it a year ago. But yeah, I was there on January 6th. I founded Cowboys for Trump early 2019. I'm also an elected official in New Mexico. I'm a county commissioner, and I'm in a county that's directly affected by an unsecured border. We have lots of drugs, lots of human trafficking issues and such that we're affected by. So when President Trump was making a really strong stand to secure our border, he really won me over, and I started a group to just support him and his actions to put our country first. And then I was involved for the next, 2 years after that, and then kind of a lead up to January 6th, I was at the Capitol. I never pushed through any barricades. I never fought with anybody. I was never in a violent or atmosphere, and all of that has been recognized by the government through my pretrial transcripts.
Let me ask you a question.
I was there because I wanted to stand by and support our president, and I had concerns about the integrity of our elections, and and I still do. So
you're
among
friends here.
I want
folks to understand. In fact, I was listening to the rehab recording. In fact, I can send it to you. The recording from last year, and Josie actually went around with a phone and just interviewed people in the crowd. And what it became universally known to me, and this was done, it was 7 to 9 our time central, sort of an 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock in the morning of January 6th.
Okay.
Josie's going around just taking. She got a veteran. She got a bunch of other folks. It's really incredible. We've got that all documented on the show. But people were there, and this is the big myth. This is the thing that we really have to get across to people. Is that folks were there to support President Trump and support the constitutional challenge to the fraudulent electors of Brandon being sent in by the governors and the secretaries of state, and they should have taken the votes of the Trump electors that were sent in by the state legislatures, because the state legislatures are the ones that govern what happens with the electors that are sent to Congress.
Sure.
And Mike Pence failed, and McConnell failed, the gelding old party that I call Republicans failed, the leftists, they wanted the deep state. So when you look at this, so I just want to make it very clear. And so your motivation, you went in, because they'll be accused of, well, you're just there for a coup. You were trying to overthrow the government. What do you say to people like that?
Yeah. It's foolish. It's straight foolishness. My part on January 6th, I had no intention of even walking down to the Capitol on that day. I didn't know that there was going to be any kind of a protest at the Capitol. I had been traveling alongside Jennifer Lawrence and Dustin Stockton and Greg Locke. I was on that platform. I spoke on that platform as a lead up to Washington, D.C., and there was never any discussion inside of that group that there was going to be anything that was going to happen at the Capitol. It was all just supposed to be a rally in front of the Ellipse. And then so at the end of the rally, when Trump was talking and mentioned everybody marched down to the Capitol, that's the first time I had even heard anything about the Capitol. But and we were going to leave. And I got a text from a good friend of mine, Gary Chapman out of Tennessee, encouraging me to go pray with people on that morning. I'm a former pastor as well. I pastored a cowboy church for about 5 years. I'm a man of faith. I've served the Lord very, very extensively over the last 15, 20 years. And so I went down to the Capitol with the heart to pray, which I did. I was able to borrow a bullhorn. I prayed with thousands of people from the West Terrace. And on January 17th, I was arrested on a single count misdemeanor charge of trespass. I'm one of 700 that didn't go into the Capitol that was arrested on this trespass charge. And I spent 3 weeks in solitary confinement. I spent the first 9 days of my incarceration in 24-hour-a-day solitary confinement, where they restricted me for a misdemeanor trespass charge. I spent 9 days in 24-hour-a-day solitary confinement, and they didn't even let me take a shower in those 9 days. They didn't let me use the telephone in those 9 days. And I had no idea of when I was getting out, what my destiny was going to be. And it was the most mentally torturous time of my life. People don't understand the torture that is involved with solitary confinement, but it's unlike anything that I have ever been through in my life. And to think
were you in DC jail?
Those men that I was locked up with Yeah, it was a D.C. Gitmo. Yeah, it was a okay, it was the right. bad one in D.C. Yeah, I was in Jacob Chansley, the QAnon shaman. He was in the cell right next to me. Big O' Barnett, who got the picture at Nancy's desk, he was in there. There was about 12 or 13 of us. Dominic Pezziola, the proud boy that knocked the window out of the Capitol, he was in there. It was all the higher profile cases. But it was the most toxic, oppressive, horrible atmosphere I've ever been in. You know, I mean, we're getting injected into a system where the people that are in charge of the system have been told that we're all a bunch of racists. And so you can imagine the treatment that we received whenever we went in there, and that is still being received. You know, we can't forget that they're still patriots. They're still people. I maybe would be better to call them, because we don't know if they're Antifa, Black Lives Matters, or Trump people, because they were all in the mix on that day. But there's people that are still being held in solitary confinement right now in the United States of America that haven't even had the graces to be able to go to trial yet. And it's been a year now, you know, so something's going to have to give. It's horrible what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Let me – I want to get Jonathan on this. Now, Jonathan Mosley, criminal defense attorney, constitutional attorney, Second Amendment specialist. He's defending a couple of people that are still there. So, Jonathan, I know you got something to say on this. And then and Corey, let me – before we do that, Corey, is it Corey your first name? Wait, I want to get your name down here so we get this out.
Corey, like the fish. Like
Corey.
The fish. Cool.
Corey.
Last name?
Yeah.
But it spells the fish.
Griffin.
Griffin.
Griffin. G-R-I-F-F-I-N. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks, Corey. Jonathan, what do you think?
Oh, the problem is I have too many things to say about that. I don't know how to fit in a quick answer. But
we got the rest of the show.
No, you're absolutely
Corey
right. These people were still there.
We'll
get
the podcast.
Just getting word. What's that? I'm just getting word that, you know, about the detainees and the what they call the CTF wing, which has become the January 6th wing. The people who have tested positive for COVID-19 in there. You know, we filed a motion about 2 months ago to release people because of COVID-19 and describing it and forced vaccinations. Brad Geyer and the judge got mad about it. Sure enough, now they're getting, they're getting COVID-19 in there. The, when it was at its height.
Wait a minute. They got COVID-19 after they got forced vaccinations?
No, they got COVID-19 being in the jail, and we argued in a motion that the best solution is to let them out on bail.
Right.
And
like they used to do with prisoners. Remember when prisoners were let out when COVID-19 because they didn't want
to
spread?
That's what they did to the criminals. When they found out that there was COVID in the prison cell, they released a lot of the criminals and rapists. And these people are innocent, and this is a disgrace. What is happening to our patriots?
Well, so much for equal justice.
Right,
well, can I ask you, Coy?
Sure.
You said you were at just before we get before I forget. Not in any particular order. Do you you were at the at the Ellipse, right?
That's correct.
At the bank. And
yes.
Did you notice that people couldn't hear what Trump was saying because the speakers conflicted with each other?
Oh, yeah. The sound was horrible. I stood all the way at the back of the crowd by the Washington Monument, okay? And I couldn't hear about one out of every three or four words he said. The wind was blowing. It was cold. The sound was horrible. And I remember standing there thinking, what a disgrace. They don't even have better sound systems so people can even hear the president speak whenever we drove so many thousands of miles to go listen to him. You know, it was, you couldn't hear everything that was said.
It was, I mean, this to what, you know, I've done sound system for church. I'm not at that level, but to me that the speakers were out of sync with each other. They were interfering. The right and the left banks were interfering with each other. But of course, the narrative here, and of course in the, you know, in today's celebration of, you know, Democratic celebration of January 6th, the idea is that every word that Trump was saying, people were robotically, you know, following, like bees following the queen bee, when you couldn't even hear what he said, for one thing. And And that's why I think people wandered off early, is because they were like, and then it was
possibly.
Never, you know, normally anything like that would be on C-SPAN. You could say, well, I can watch it later on C-SPAN, the website.
Yeah.
And I believe it was not broadcast.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Well, no, I mean, they wasn't broadcast.
I recall that when you tried to listen on WMAL, they weren't broadcasting his speech. And the cell phone systems were jammed. So this idea that there was this great big conspiracy and everybody was following his, you know, and they say, well, he should have said this, he should have said that. Nobody would have heard him say that. I mean, weren't lugging a television around the Washington Mall.
They might have started walking off too, because Trump was just saying the same old stuff he'd been saying for the last, 2 months. I mean, we all went to Washington D.C. because we really expected there to be a new revelation, because we had been hearing President Trump say specifically that China had stolen our elections for how long, and so I held more stock in the president. I mean, if China really stole our elections, in my opinion, that would be an act of war. You know, that would be reason to take the most drastic of actions to secure our country if China stole our elections. So, you know, whenever you have the group of people that were gathered there on that day that were passionate enough to drive all the way to Washington, D.C., and you had the furthering of China stealing the elections, you know, what are people supposed to do, you know? Or were we all just supposed, I mean, was everybody just supposed to just go back home after President Trump just said that China stole the elections? I mean, it wasn't a real good message, I don't feel like, to put out, you know? I mean, it instigated people, and I don't know. I mean, it's difficult.
Well,
and then others like me wind up getting thrown in solitary confinement for just walking down to the Capitol and standing outside the Capitol and praying with people, and the assaults that took place on that day, and the abuse of the Capitol police officer on those protesters on that day. What the media is not telling you, we're not seeing those videos yet, but those videos will eventually come out. And all of the FBI informants and instigators that were involved on that day.
What'd
you
see on that?
They better be crawling deeper, huh?
What can you add to the record of that? Did you see the Capitol Hill police in particular either open doors, invite people in, beat people up? I know there's a woman who was beaten to death outside the Capitol, and we still have to look up her name. I think James, check on that again. We know Ashley Babbitt was assassinated by Michael J. Byrd, the lieutenant in the Capitol Hill police. But what did you see? What did you actually see in terms of people?
My own perspective, honestly, I had no interaction with any officers at all on that day. I saw some from a distance only because they were wearing those bright green vests and stuff, but I was never in any kind of close proximity with any officers at all. And I heard some booms and stuff on that day. I guess they were flash grenades now, but I didn't know if they were fireworks or what was going on, because there was all the illuminated smoke going up in there, and then they'd have the big booms, and I didn't know if it was fireworks or what was going on, you know, because it wasn't.
I was tempted to include somebody who called me yesterday from Kentucky, but I just heard about him, and I'm going to have some people talk about him. He's just Eric Clark. He had a similar discussion about he came to and it's really it's helpful if people can picture the Capitol and the grounds and the road, you know, the Pennsylvania Avenue and Constitution Avenue sort of converge to one of the walkways. They're not really stairways, but like probably 2 feet football length long from Second Street, where it's a real street, and they have the fountain. Some people call it the Peace Monument recently. And people came up to that, and he said there were no barricades when he arrived. There were no signs. He told his friends, I'm going to see how close I can get. And they hung back, and he said he went up there. He says there were no signs telling, because normally it's open, and there were 6 demonstrations that had permits on that day
yeah.
from the U.S. Capitol Police.
Yeah.
So in order to be guilty of entering a restricted area, you'd have knowingly, the statute says you must be knowingly enter a restricted area. And if the signs aren't there and it's normally public, then you can't knowingly enter a restricted area. And so he got all the way up. And like you said, he got up close to the building, and there were a line of police. And so he figured, well, that must be the line. Like if you see a line of police and there's no signs and the barricades are all gone by that, except the Ray Epps and his shadowy group, then you're going to assume, well, I guess everything up to that line is okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd like to get, like I said,
that's very understandable to assume that, you know. I mean, and we were all like that because we all had the same heart that Derek did, you know. I mean, maybe not all, not the Antifa Lives Matters and the anarchists that were in the front, but the average Trump supporter that was there, we were looking for where do we go and how do we, you know, make sure we don't do anything wrong and we respect the law and, you know, but I never heard, not even anybody, not even a loudspeaker say, leave. You know, you would think that there would at least have been cops telling people, there would have been police walking around with megaphones telling people that they couldn't be there. They weren't doing that. They were just waiting until you crossed over the line, and then they'd try to split your head open with a baton or blow a flashbang up at your feet when you didn't even know you were even crossed over a line. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and I didn't see this. I didn't see this personally on that day, but this is an opinion that I've derived from watching the videos and stuff that were released after, you know. I mean, I was shocked that evening of January 6th when me and the guy I was traveling with got back to our room and I turned the TV on. My jaw hit the floor whenever I saw the images of that day and the violence that took place on that day, because that wasn't what I was a part of. I wasn't a part of that. But then I come back here to New Mexico, and the media and the local media and everybody tries to make me look like I'm America's number one terrorist. They tried recalling me from my commissioner position, which failed miserably on them. And it's just been a continual assault. I finally have a bench trial set for March 21st, and it'll be 14 months since I've been charged that I have the right to what was supposed to have been a speedy trial, but that went right out the window with January 6th, you know?
I hope you have a good lawyer and you emphasize.
Are you through with a case?
No, I've got a bench trial set for March 21st. That's when I'll go before federal judge Trevor McFadden and they'll decide my fate if they want to give me the electric chair on a misdemeanor charge, you know. Crazy.
Well, that would be unusual.
I wanted to say something. I noticed something very odd when we were walking towards the Capitol, and I didn't have a clue that we were supposed to be walking that way because I had a bad knee. Did you guys notice, I don't know how do you call this thing, where you used to hang people back in the old days? And the Black Lives Matter, I noticed they were taking turns and going there and putting the rope around their neck and acting like if they were being hung and all that. And I'm like, what is going on? This is odd. Did you guys get to see that?
There was so much propaganda involved on that day, you know. I mean, and then they say that they don't know who set those gallows up, and they say they don't know who dropped the pipe bombs off at the Democrat and the Republican headquarters. It's bullcrap. I think it's all just a show. I think it was all orchestrated just to try to make the Trump people look as bad as they could.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you that guy that dropped those pipe bombs off was probably either Black Lives Matters,
Antifa.
Or an FBI,
mm-hmm.
or part of the FBI, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go around our callers here. And I've been sort of hanging back because I'm enjoying all of you talking. I think, Gene, you had a comment, and then I want to go to Cindy and just make sure everybody gets a word in before Coy has to. Gene?
Sure.
Did you have a comment, or was it Cindy?
I,
I wanted to just ask Jonathan, is there any way those guys can sue for the, how they were treated and gone through?
Yeah, it happens. Yeah. It happens fairly frequently, but it helps a great deal if they are found not guilty and if they don't plead. Like they can sue for malicious prosecution as well as for their treatment, but only if they don't plead guilty and they are found not guilty. And I wanted to get in there. I hope you have a good lawyer there and things. Because
I was
going to
say,
I
do, yeah.
Good, because we're working on putting together. I mean, it's a lot of work to put together the photographs and the videos showing that by the time you were there, because if you just say it, people, they, you know, they'll say, oh, yeah, sure. But if you have hard evidence that on the time stamps, when you got there, the barricades are gone. So, and there's no permanent signs at the Capitol, you know, because I live here most of the time. The Capitol is a very public building. There's cafeteria. You can just walk up there and go to the cafeteria on a normal day. And walk around the rotunda. So you'd have to have really clear signs that it was restricted that day to overcome the normal expectation of it being public. And they put these flimsy like 8x12-inch signs on the barricades. So when the barricades were removed, moved, or went flat, you couldn't see the signs. So you have to make sure that – go ahead.
No, I was going to say one more thing, too, that I don't know if y'all have been hashing around on your legal end, but what they're considering to be an authorized zone, what they're charging everybody for crossing into this unauthorized zone, well, legally, the only ones that can establish an unauthorized zone is a Secret Service. That day, that perimeter was established by the D.C. Capitol Police. So technically, according to the letter of the law, it wasn't really an unauthorized zone to begin with because it wasn't established by Secret Service. It was established by Capitol Police. We interjected that. We filed that appeal in the courts, and they denied it. But we're going to appeal it probably.
Yeah, they're bending on the back.
You just said something brilliant. I just want to jump in here real quick for a second. Secret Service has been surprisingly conspicuous by their absence in this entire affair. Why have we heard nothing? And I know they protect the president. They're not specifically, you know, protecting in Congress, but they're there in Washington. They got a pretty big force. They got snipers on rooftops. They do all kinds of cool stuff. You know, why are they completely absent for this? And did they play a part that we don't know about yet? Let me start with Coy and then Jonathan.
Yeah.
Coy, do you know anything about that?
Yeah. No, I don't. I don't, but it's an interesting point. You know, I just – My biggest prayer, my biggest hope on this whole January 6th deal is just that there's still people with integrity and a moral compass inside of our DOJ and our FBI and our Secret Service and our Capitol Police and on that will come up as whistleblowers just to reveal what really went on that day. Because according to the record as well, there was only one out of every four Capitol Police officers that reported to work that day. And you have a day whenever there's supposed to be millions of mad Trump people in town, and you have one out of every four officers reporting. So there are just lots of really big questions that need to be answered.
Well, I think you played a part in this, and I think that all the Trump supporters, the whole idea of you being in the Capitol, the reason there was what I call the January 6th Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in, is that you were there as scapegoats. Well, that's what I call it. I mean, I've been calling it that since January 6th last year. You know, it was an invitational walk-in, and your purpose was to be a scapegoat, the excuse for the coup to actually steal the election. So the real insurrection was the deep state, Democrats and Republicans, the gelding old party Republicans and the Marxist Democrats who didn't want Trump in office. They wanted to steal the election. They wanted to stop the electoral challenge, and they needed an excuse. They needed scapegoats to do that. That's what you guys built.
Right.
Okay? So you were there specifically – yeah, you were there specifically to stop the electoral challenge so that Mike Pence could say, well, we got to go ahead and get the vote. And the 6 hours, we're going to talk about this in a little bit. I don't know how much time you have, but if you got some time, I want to get into the six-hour gap between when Congress stopped and when they came back and confirmed Biden. And so you guys, if you think of yourself, does that make sense? You were there. Your role was predetermined to be the scapegoat so they could blame you and still put Biden in office. Make sense?
Sure. Possibly, you know, it possibly could have, but that wasn't what my intent was on that day.
Exactly.
I didn't feel like I was going to be able to stop the election. I thought the elections had already been certified whenever I was walking down to the Capitol, and that's recorded in court documents through a statement that I had made, you know. I mean,
okay.
I was just there trying to offer myself to stand up for our country. Yeah. So yeah but I can guarantee they could have sure played us that way, though.
Hey, listen, now that you know about our show, I'll get in touch with you off the air. I'll get in touch with Jonathan, too. So you guys, we got Josie, we got Cindy, we got Pianki, who just joined us also. I'm going to get him in there as well.
Great.
So Josie, you first. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, and everybody. Uh-huh. But the good thing about all this is I truly believe we have 4 laptops that belong to the witch, Nancy Pelosi. So it's all going to come out. These people are going to be arrested. I believe Nancy Pelosi should be going to get more. Oh yeah, so
why aren't the Republicans trying to close this thing down? Yeah, why aren't the Republicans trying to close down the D.C. jail? Why aren't the geldings trying to close down the D.C. jail and audit and oversight oversight on them? That's another question. Cindy, do you want to get on this, or are you happily listening?
I'm listening.
Okay, let's get to Pianki then.
Okay.
One of our regular callers. Pianki, you're welcome. You've got Corey Griffin of Cowboys for Trump.
Good morning.
Josie surprised us. Thanks. And Josie, we're going to give Josie and Corey a round of applause here. So let's get that.
You're too kind.
All right.
Oh, no problem. Pianki?
I got 2 questions.
Yes.
1, Jonathan, how many blacks are locked in those jails, in D.C. jail? None.
Whenever I was in that wing of that jail, there was 12 of us, I believe, and there was two gentlemen in there that were black.
Out of 600?
And another thing.
The wing that I was in, there was 12 total, I think, in the wing, 12 or 13. And 2 of those 12 or 13 were black.
How many black guards are in the D.C. jail, just out of curiosity?
The administration is black. The guards are black. And like I said, you know, the treatment of those that are being detained is extremely severe because, you know, you have a lot of black jail guards that have been indoctrinated that Trump people are all racists, you know, so you can imagine. The treatment
guarding white Trump supporters. This is fascinating. I'm just curious.
Exactly.
Yeah, go ahead.
One other thing, Greg.
Go ahead, Pianki.
No matter who the president was, this could have been John F. Kennedy or Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The purpose was to make Congress in the hands of Mike Pence to do the right thing according to the Constitution. When you had those controversies, that was supposed to go back and be decided by the states. The people of the states was to make their legislature do the right thing.
Yeah.
That's right.
So Mike Pence was constitutionally bound to send the electors back in the seven challenged states to send 2 safe slates of electors. We went over that in the first hour. Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. The states, which incidentally have to have audits and are trying to have audits, okay. So this is how this works. Now Corey, you're Arizona or where or New Mexico? Where are you?
I'm in New Mexico.
Okay, so when's your audit coming?
I'm a county commissioner.
When's your audit?
Huh?
Okay. When's your audit?
I'm very very excited and proud to say that through my leadership here on the county level, we're going to be the first county in the state of New Mexico to audit our 2020 elections.
Interesting.
We're fixing to do a full forensic audit on them on our next commission meeting here in about a week. We have the item on there to approve the funding, and we're going to work with some of the leaders in this. So yeah.
Do you have Dominion voting machines?
We do. We're going to open them, and we're going to hand count those ballots, and we're going to match them with the number that the machine gave us. We're going to verify all the mail-in ballots. We're going to validate all the absentee ballots, and we're going to make sure it was only legal residents inside of our county that voted. And we here in Otero County have a much I feel like we have a better platform to do this audit through because our population isn't as heavy. There's only 65,000 people in our own, in our whole county. So, you know, we can do this through volunteer efforts and through organization on our county. And we're gonna come up with the true number of Otero County. And whenever that number comes in and it's different than the number that we were given to begin with, then I'm going to move to decertify the 2020 elections, and I'm going to encourage my fellow county commissioners and adjoining counties to do the same, and we're going to decertify them on the county level. That's where it should have taken place. Give
another round of applause.
All right.
Well, now, I've got a bill. Let me just tell you briefly what we do here, because I don't know how much time you have left, but the whole point of Action Radio is this is the world's first show where we actually have a working citizen legislature. So we actively write bills. Josie wrote a bill on fingerprint ID. Pianki wrote a bill on separating federal and state ballots. I wrote a bill for Florida, which you could easily adopt in New Mexico. One of the provisions is that all voter registrations expire December 31st at midnight. So everybody has to re-register anyway. It's the greatest way to clean voting rolls every single year, okay? So we've got things to help you, and you can help us. You, if you want to be the first person to take on some citizen legislation, I'll send it. We're going to talk off the air, obviously. but that's what we do.
Yeah.
So if I can help you.
Well, let's do it, you know, because I'm telling you what, you know, we all, for the last four years, we've sat around waiting for Trump to fly in with the cape on and save everybody. And I don't think that's what God's intent is for us to move at the grassroots ground level and where that is that best represented at in your city, village, and county governments. What we always consider the lowest forms of government is truly in regards to the Constitution, the highest forms of government, because that's where the voice of the people is first expressed at. You know, I mean, everything's running backwards right now, you know.
Yeah. Let's go around our panel. Josie hasn't a chance to speak, and you're Josie. Yeah, so Josie, do you want to get in this? Yeah.
Don't be in Plan B, okay? I have to guide you a little more here. Trump is coming back. We're gonna go through darkness a little more, but we're gonna see the light coming soon, okay?
I don't know. You know, I mean, as far as Trump goes and his political future and coming back, I mean, I pray. Too, Josie. Yes. I pray we have justice right now, and I pray that Trump is reinstated in the office. But looking at Trump 2024, forget about it. I don't see it. You know, I think that if Trump's going to hang on the fringe and think that he's going to run for president in 2024, he's going to run out of fuel. You know, I mean, his position on the vaccine and the booster.
Hold on, Josie.
He's parking.
He is not our answer.
To be able to back out of.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me
but
take an individual on this. Wait.
He's not running. I'm sorry. He's not running. He's coming to get what he already won. Okay. He's not running.
Okay.
I have to make sure people get that out of their head.
Well,
he's
hope I can help him in that through the audit.
Okay, that's the hotel bell. That's the first warning. The next one's the Chinese gong. I want to separate you guys because these are very important topics. Just to make it clear, we have really feisty debates on this show, okay? And so I want to go through the whole panel. We've got five of you on the line right now. And so what I want to do is, and I disagree with Josie on some things. I think, as we talked about, and Cindy's going to say the same thing, that Trump really needs to change the position before
he's
in a position to run.
Later.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. Hey, listen, if we can bet, we'll work on that. I want to get to Cindy, who had a comment, and then Pianki, and then Josie, and Cora, because you're welcome to do this anytime. You're our guest. So, Cindy, you want to say something about Trump?
I beg society to stop relying on Trump to save us.
Okay.
That
I'm with
window
you.
Has closed.
No, it's not. No.
Quite?
Trump to save us, the only one that can save us right now, I believe, is divine intervention in the Lord Jesus Christ.
Amen.
You know, I mean, that's our only hope right now. And I believe the reason why Trump isn't in office right now is because the American people started building a golden calf, if you will, out of Donald Trump. They started thinking that Trump was going to get us out of this. And Trump loves the credit. You know, he loves the kudos. He loves the attention. And God is a jealous God, and God's not going to – God, you know, God's got something much bigger and much greater for America than politics, you know. But we have to follow him. Yep.
Guilty is charged.
Well, don't forget Jesus. Action Radio. God, don't forget, here's something. Let me just jump in here for a second, because we've got a citizen legislature that's never been tried before. We've got ideas here that no one else has thought of. We've got a whole movement of people that I think can do huge things to change, you know, all kinds of stuff going on here. All right, let's get back in order. Let's go. Pianki, then Cindy, then Josie, then Coy.
You know, you guys talking about God's plan. There's a large Muslim population in this country that don't have the same God that you do, and it's increasing all the time. So you just think about that. Another thing, you talk about Trump saving. What we wanted out of Trump, which he had done well, was working on, is his policies. His policy on the border protection. His policy on tariff, a plate steel from Russia. His policy on tax reform. Businesses tax less, people tax less, where you can keep your money in your pocket. All that other stuff is nothing. And also his policy on education. If American public was educated, then this pandemic probably wouldn't have went as far as it had. It's because of the miseducation of the people. There's a book called The Miseducation of the Negro. People need to read that book.
Yes, sir.
In other words, if you don't get the 2020 election straight now, then there needs not be any in the future because they're going to fall the same way.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you something else. You need to get those bills that we wrote, especially the one about the separation between the federal ballot with the president, vice president, congressperson, and U.S. senator. It needs to be separated from state and local ballots. State and local commissioners, entities are never going to fall in line and march at the same tune. But the U.S. Congress provides Congress with the position, the power, to change the way the federal requirements are for federal ballots. That needs to be done.
Sure. Well said.
I'll send you the bill and you can think about it. I still have questions about that myself. And we do. We have many different opinions here. Like Josie and I disagree on things. Pianki and I disagree on some things. That's just the way it goes here. Let's get to Jonathan, who hasn't participated for a bit here. Jonathan, what do you think so far? Hello? I got you there.
Well, we've covered the ground. I do think, I mean, Mike Pence, as I've said before, is just overwhelmingly dumb. And I thought that when he was governor of Indiana before any of this happened.
No, he's a useful idiot. He's the stooge. He's the plant. He's the next in line after John McCain, Mitt Romney, and now Mike Pence. He's going to be the one that the deep state's going to put up for office. Let me get Corey's opinion on that. I'd be really curious. Corey, what do you think of Mike Pence? And then I'll get back to Jonathan. Corey?
I think, Mike, you know, I said it to media the other day. I look at Mike Pence like – I look at him like a male version of Meryl Streep. You know, he's just a good actor. You know, he just – I think he's a good actor. I think that he's really fooled a lot of people, I think. But then at the end of the day – you know, I've met Mike Pence. I've met him in the Oval Office once. I probably visited with him for 10 minutes. Or I met him a couple times, I guess I should say. But I don't really know him, you know. So it's hard for me to really have a strong opinion on somebody that I don't know. What I've seen on the outside, I would stand behind. I think he's a good actor. I think that he's a politician. And I don't think that he served the American people well a year ago today. You know?
Yeah. So I think.
And what I was saying, I'll
be
not
blind.
Just then.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Because what the thing is that what happened a year ago and really ever is because the people, like I said, the people who consider themselves to be the guardians of the way things are in Washington D.C. are just overwhelmingly dumb, and you know some of them are evil dumb. You know, one can be conniving, but still dumb. So they don't know the Constitution, as I said. They don't know what's supposed to happen. All they know, like in terms of the votes and everything, you know, the Electoral College and everything like that, is the talking points they've been handed. And they're experts because they just copy what the last person said. They don't actually know anything. So, you know, very, very concerned about that. I forget now what I was going to ask. Pastor Coy, you know, I don't know if you're currently, but I'll refer to you in this question that way.
Yes, sir.
I do believe that we have free will, and God is not going to, God is not open to easy solutions. And it's very frustrating, and I don't like it in my personal life or even watching the news, but it seems to me that until the American people come to some kind of unity in support of God and God's principles, there isn't an easy answer. You know, God's not going to allow an easy answer that allows most people just to go on, you know, blindly on their life and not really confront these issues. You know, I'm sure God is not in favor of a solution that allows most people to just totally check out and not be involved and not learn and not take a side. I think when people take a side, when they learn, become educated, then God will step in and bless it. Because we do have free will as a nation.
Amen. And it begins, and it begins with repentance, you know. I mean, we have to come to a point in our nation where we acknowledge that murdering our unborn is wrong, you know. We have to come to the realization that, you know, a marriage, a man's sexual identity is, you know, what you're born as, a male or a female. I mean, we really need to come to a place of repentance, and that's where the Lord directed me on January 6th last year, is 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14. I recited that scripture through the bullhorn that over the nation's capital and encouraged people to repent and turn back to God and turn from wickedness, and then God will hear our prayers and heal our land. But it's got to begin with that. It's got to be – we have to be a nation that comes to our knee and not a knee in submission to Black Lives Matters or some kind of a racist movement, but we need to be a nation that gets on our knees before an almighty God and acknowledges that we have been very wicked over the last however many hundred years, you know, or 100 years.
Well, you know, if I could say something, Donald Trump is, I'm not a religious person, but Donald Trump was your divine intervention. He was your John the Baptist.
He was being used by
but
God.
You chose, wait a minute, but you chose Barabbas. That's what happened. He chose Barabbas. Now we're going to suffer for it. I never heard a president at that level, and I'm probably older than all of you, talk about the things that he talked about. And not only talked about them, but he either did or worked hard to put them in place. Never.
You're correct.
Absolutely.
No, that's
the
good part about Trump.
Being the first sitting president to go to the pro-life rally in Washington, D.C., I mean, that was amazing.
Well, here's the good part about Trump.
Let
me just jump in here for a second real quick. But he was doing some amazing things up until COVID. And I think he lost his way at COVID. I think
that,
if we can have sit down and have a serious talk with him, you know, if I one of my dreams is to get folks like Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Risch, Dr. Malone, and Dr. McCullough around a table with Trump, me too, of course, you know, and set him straight on what happened and see if we can kind of fix this problem. But I got a really selfish question for you. Did you meet Donald Trump?
I have. Yeah, I've been in the Oval. I've sat down at the desk with him in the Oval Office. September 12th, 2000.
Okay.
19.
I have a dream. Mm-hmm. I have a dream for Action Radio. I want to get Donald Trump's endorsement of Action Radio. So if you want to talk off the air sometime, if you have a contact at Mar-a-Lago, I'm serious about this. I want to tell him what we do here in terms of citizen legislation. I want to teach. I want to show you how we do things, but how simple it is. We have a website where anybody can write a bill. You know, if the bill is good enough, we support it. Millions of people can share it with media, with Congress, with state legislatures, local governments, with you, like that thing I did. And this is my ultimate goal, is to be able to get enough people on, you know, listening to our show so that we can have the kind of impact where if we do have a bill, like the one I talked about with you, registration is expiring
but
at midnight,
really,
so I can do
it. Again,
that's kind of behind the scenes.
Everybody's always trying to get a hold of the president or trying to get a hold of your governor, your senators, and all these, what we consider to be all these big important people, but who you really need to get a hold of is your school board, is your village council, is your county commissioner, and your county sheriff, more important than any of them, and get them to honor their oath of office. Instead of everybody being starstruck trying to get President Trump's autograph, you need to be finding out
who your sheriff is and knocking on his damn door and getting him to protect your rights.
We're actually doing that too. We have a bill. Hang on a second. No, you're absolutely right. We're trying to attack all levels, but I think it would be huge for us to get the Trump endorsement. But here's the thing too. We also have a bill creating an illegal alien free zone. This is something you might want to think about too. By using civil asset forfeiture, you're not rounding anybody up. You're not using immigration law. You're not having any impact with the feds or even your state government. Locally, the sheriff can impose civil asset forfeiture on illegal aliens, because your national status is not private information; it's public, something you have to declare when you enter or leave the country. Okay, so your citizenship is public information. Therefore, you can, as a local government, kick out your illegal aliens for simply asset forfeiture, all this stuff. So there's something you can use at the local level. We're trying to do that here in Santa Rosa County, Florida, and we're running up against problems with our own county commissioners that don't seem to want to do anything about illegal aliens. But there's a bill that you could look at right now at the local level and impose civil asset forfeiture on illegal aliens to make it impossible for them to live in your county. The more counties that do that, there are places they have to live.
But I will also get people to show up at our county commissioner meetings.
Yep, I know.
I've been screaming for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Hey, Greg.
No, Greg,
dreams do come true. So continue the dream. We'll see if we can get Donald
Trump.
Well,
I'm not stopping.
On the show. I've been trying to get a few top head honchos, but I've been working on it.
Well, we have to approach
this
from all angles. We need the starstruck, we need the celebrities, but we also need the local folks, and we need to do this. And that's why we're doing it, all levels of government and all levels of public figures. Go ahead,
Greg. I wanted to thank Coy because I know he has to go to work, and I only asked him for 10 minutes. Thank you so much that you stay a little longer.
It's an honor. I'm packing my lunch.
Okay.
And fixing. I lay rock. I'm a stonemason, and you know, we work hard every day, just like so many of your listeners out there. You know, and we go through the same struggles, you know, that so many of your listeners out there are going through. But stay the course. Keep up the fight. We're going to get through this. I might plug real quickly. I have two cases in the 10th Circuit on January the 21st. So any of your listeners out there that are people of faith, if you could please lift me up. January the 21st. In the 10th Circuit in Denver, Colorado, because there are two very crucial cases that are going to be heard. The oral argument, Sidney Powell is representing me against the state of New Mexico, Maggie Toulouse Oliver, the Secretary of State, and then I'm being sued by the chairman of the Democrat Party of my county because I blocked him on my own personal Facebook page, and he said I didn't have a right to do that because I'm an elected official. So it's comical. But at the same time, they're important because they're going to set precedents in case law, and these are the battles that we got to win. So, So there's going to be some big wins coming up, I pray.
January, Sidney Powell. I want to get in touch with her about that.
Yeah, call us back and give us a report, please.
Sure.
If your case is resolved by April 19th, you know, I'd love to have you as a witness in the Oath Keeper case that starts on April 19th. Obviously, you have to face your questions about how it affects your pending trial. But if you're done by then,
you keep me in the loop. You know, Stuart Rhodes is a personal friend of mine. I know Stuart. I've been around him quite a bit. I've been around a lot of the leadership of the Oath Keepers, and I've met a lot of patriots inside of that group. So it's just the total irony of the days that we're living in whenever you have a group of men called Oath Keepers that are being thrown in prison because all they want is elected officials to keep their oath. That's the wickedness that's manifesting itself in our country today, and we need to identify it and eliminate it.
Right. Well, let me say real quick, you know, everybody's thinking, well, this group of people didn't do what those other people did on January 6th. And you find out the other people didn't do it either. You tend to think like, these people didn't do all these horrible things. And you kind of find like, well, nobody did. You know, the more you look at it, the whole thing is just a huge lie. Anyway, I know you got to go.
I do. But I tell you what, I appreciate you guys. Keep up the good work.
God bless you.
And Yeah, and keep me in the loop. I'll come on in anytime you guys holler at me. I'll come back on. Okay.
Oh, we'll be in touch.
Greg,
I want to talk to you about that court case.
Contact information.
Yeah.
Contact information.
Yeah,
they've got it. All right, y'all.
Mail.
God bless you.
I'll give it to Greg.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Bye-bye, y'all. Take care. God bless.
Jonathan, I have a question. On January 6th, I remember around 5-something, somebody announced, not in the big speakers in the Capitol, but the war was going around, but not as quick, that there was going to be a curfew. And people barely made it to the cars. Any of the Trump supporters or anybody that you represented, are they saying that maybe they got arrested because of the curfew and they're blaming it because they were at the Capitol?
There were some people arrested. The people I've dealt with weren't in that group, but there are people who were arrested simply because of a curfew violation. It went out as an alert, an emergency alert on cell phones. And of course the thing was an absolute madhouse. When I left the area, you know, I was doing filming and things for National File, and then Noel Fritz had a hotel room over across town. And they questioned him and scared his wife and things like that. But he was just sitting there as a command center. I had to try to get over there. How do you get to this madness? Like, what Uber is going to come? Like, okay, I'm standing in the middle of 100,000 people, you know, on Second Street. You know, look for me. I mean, how do you get from point A to point B in that madness? So I can see how it would be. It would be a problem for people who are trying to comply, is I think what you're saying, is would be difficult.
Because we barely made it to the bus because it took 45 minutes to walk back. We did not get an alert because a lot of the cell towers were shut down, so we didn't communicate out. So, see, we didn't get no alert. Somebody said, I think there's a curfew, and I'm like, what? And we cut it running because they say if you're not back, I think it was by 6 o'clock, out, you're going to be arrested. And we barely made it within minutes, barely made it. And my niece was in severe pain from arthritis a little bit. And the cold weather was making it worse. So I could have been arrested myself because I barely made it to the bus. And I can imagine how many people started running. And there was people in wheelchairs and everything. So I don't know. It's crazy.
PC Mag has an article about why the cell system crashed. And it's important because they're saying that, you know, Trump was directing things, you know, from, you know, play by play. And he could have made a speech earlier. Nobody would have heard it if he'd given a speech earlier. But they say that normally when they have large events, and, you know, we have large events from time to time in D.C. It's a normal part of life. The current chief of the U.S. Capitol Police has admitted it. He says he's had, and it's a bit probably of hyperbole, but he said we have multiple demonstrations at the Capitol every day. Now, I'm sure that's an exaggeration, but, you know, he was emphasizing this is not unusual. The size is unusual. The media fest is unusual. But he says normally the PC Mag interviewed people and said normally they bring in these mobile cell sites, which for some reason they call cows, and they didn't do it on January 6th. So when the cell system was overloaded, which, like I say, is not unusual when they have large numbers of people in D.C., they did not implement solutions that they would normally – and I'm going to try to subpoena someone from Verizon or something like that. I have to figure out who it is, or I would have subpoenaed them already for trial on April 19th. So to the assumption that all these people were coordinating. And the other thing, too, that I think people need to realize is, you know, even under normal conditions, I used to live in a bad cell area. If I send a text, I've had times when it took 24 hours to arrive with the other person. You think it was just sent. when you get a text message and it says it's just the time that it arrived, you don't know that it took hours to get there. It doesn't show up that way. So these text messages back and forth, you know, they were not instantaneous under those conditions, but they look like they are on the phone and on the records. So
But Jonathan, you know, when we were in the morning with Trump, and then he's speaking and doing all the stuff, we were recording, we were sending messages. I didn't have any problem because I called Greg, and I think you did too. I didn't have any problem, but once we started walking towards the Capitol, our phones went down. Oh yeah, it's just like.
Why are both of you recording? I've got Josie at around. It would have been 8 o'clock central, so about 9 o'clock, a little after nine, and you were passing phones around, your phone around to get all those folks on. So I post that recording. In fact, I can send it to you again of last year's show. And Jonathan, you came on with about half an hour left. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Josie.
I said I tried playing it, but it didn't want to play, so I didn't listen to it. But I didn't try.
There's a little trouble with podcasts. I should make a note of this too. Sometimes you have to try it a couple of times. You got to wait for that pink timeline to appear, and you have to have the time. You have to have the start clock, and those two white bars up at the top on the left. Once you get the clock, the 00:00, you know that's when it'll start to play.
Yeah.
But it's having a little trouble, especially if it's an older show. The newer shows it's a little easier, but even then, sometimes you have to click it a couple times to get it going. But to us,
the group was odd that our phones were not working once we were walking towards the Capitol, and I didn't have a.
That makes sense though.
That far.
If you're trying to disrupt communications,
weird.
No. If you're trying, if you got a mob of people you're trying to control, the easiest way to control them is stop them talking to each other. If all of a sudden the word got out, they're arresting people at the Capitol. Don't go there. They're making scapegoats out of all of you for this called insurrection. When they, in fact, were the insurrection. That was interesting that Coy didn't have that thought that he was being used as part of the insurrection by the deep state. I was surprised at that.
Yeah.
Next time,
Cindy Bianchi,
take CBN radios.
Too. Say that again?
Bianchi, go
next
ahead.
Next time, take CB radios.
Breaker. This is another
day.
Well, yeah, no, that's true, and they did, but and see, that's why they're saying, well, the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys must be part of a, you know, armed paramilitary militia thing because some of them did bring radios, but they know, especially them, they know from experience, they've done this a lot, that the cell phones cannot be relied upon. So you go to Woodstock or a concert or to a football game, and you bring a radio, which you can get, you know, at CVS or something like that. And now that means you're guilty of a crime, of an insurrection, because you have a radio now. Like, you know, like a World War II movie where they're ransacking people's homes to find the radio. Very disturbing.
World War II and the suppression of rights that went on in various countries, like, I don't know, Germany, Japan, China, you know, all that kind of stuff, Russia. Yeah, it's quite fascinating.
Right, but – I agree that it was difficult, but that the cell phone. I mean, because the PC Mag article, is written from the standpoint like, oh no, they didn't intentionally shut off the cell phone service. There's an innocent explanation for it.
Oh, there always is.
The innocent explanation is not so innocent, even as they, and it's proof that, like I say, the people were not coordinating. And again, because we're dealing with things that, you know, that the entirety of the evidence of, you know, against the Oath Keepers, like the Proud Boys, is that they plan to go to D.C. Well, of course they plan to go to D.C. Nobody drives.
The rally
was
called. Everybody knew there was a rally there.
If you're going to Yellowstone, what's up?
I mean, everybody knew there was a rally. Trump was going to give a speech. Everybody knew that the election was going to be, the certification was going to be challenged. In fact, the Trump supporters went there. And here's the irony of this whole thing. The Trump supporters were there specifically, you folks included, you know, John and Josie were specifically there to support the challenge, to support the Constitution, to support the constitutional government.
Right.
And yet this has been completely turned around by the media narrative. This is what Corey was talking about when he got back to New Mexico. And they said, you traitor, you Trump supporter, you tried to overthrow the government. No, they overthrew the government. The Trump supporters were scapegoats, still are. And that's a big problem.
And the narrative you'll hear today and you know, and constantly is that
the
goal was to stop the certification vote. And of course,
no.
that's there are things I don't necessarily care about as issues, but mm-hmm. bad arguments are like, you know, fingernails on a chalkboard to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that, I mean, it's a stupid argument. Why would anyone want to stop the certification vote? I guess people, they somehow think that...
Well, they didn't.
That,
they were supporting the certification. See, that's the irony. That's the lie. That's the big lie. Trump supporters were there to support the challenge to the certification. That was the whole point of January
right.
6th.
Yeah, but they just wanted them. Go ahead.
And no one knew that we were supposed to walk to the Capitol. I was like,
oh, wait a minute. Enter Ray Epps.
It was kind of weird.
You guys were all handled. Remember? Remember Ray Epps when they had the video of him and some guys yelling, Fed, Fed, Fed. You know, when Ray Epps mm-hmm. said, you have to go, we have to go into the Capitol. He said that on January 5th, the day before. This is how I knew this whole thing was orchestrated. Trump supporters were handled,
and Greg,
were manipulated.
The other thing, it was like bumper to bumper. As we got closer to the Capitol, I was in the back part.
Right.
Bumper to bumper, I've seen all the black young men and women and white hanging themselves there, acting like a show there. And I was like,
oh, the Jesse Smollett fake
I
racist attack thing?
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. They were kind of like making people more angry in their head. It was a plan. I didn't know, of course.
Everything
and as we're walking bumper to bumper, there was uh-huh. like at least 50 men, and there were Black Lives Matter and Antifa dressed up like Trump, but we did not know, of course. And a lot of them have baseball bat and all those little juice things that they throw, whatever, tear gas hanging, and I'm like, that's odd. And they came moving us out of the way like, we're going in the Capitol now, come on, make a way, make a way. And they came right in the middle of all of us. There was a lined up of men, at least 50, and some women, but mainly men. And they move us out of the way, no matter if they crush you or whatever.
See, they had to get you into the Capitol. This is the plan. They had to get you into the Capitol to stop the certification challenge. This is what all this is about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is why.
Yeah.
I don't think Coy, you know, I'm going to talk to him more about this, but it's fascinating, that, you know, because he was there, you were there.
Yeah.
And this is the big lie. This is the thing that we have to expose, that the real insurrection was stopping that. And those dark 6 hours that are absent from the congressional record, and this never happens. You never have a situation where there's nothing there. You can, in fact, Jonathan, I want to get you on this too. Go ahead, just quick.
Yeah.
Then I want to get Cindy and Pierre.
As I got closer to the steps in the back, the police were helping us to go closer and closer, and I couldn't go up because of my knee. So I said, no,
right.
I'm staying back here. I didn't go any steps at all. And they were
now, why would the Capitol Hill police want you in the Capitol? Think about that. Why would the Capitol Hill police?
They were even low. I don't know. Because they wanted
I
to
know.
Come in. They were,
they were in
a metal thing protecting to get in. They were even lowering for you to walk in and waving at you to come in. Mm-hmm.
This is the Capitol
Hill
Invitational walk-in. You had to be there, not just you specifically, Josie, but the Trump supporters' part in this whole little drama was to make sure that the certification vote was stopped, and they had to have Trump supporters in the Capitol in order to blame them for stopping it, when they, in fact, stopped it themselves. That was the orchestration. That's why all those Black Lives Matter and Antifa and FBI people and all those other agent provocateurs, all the people that were paid by the deep state, to make sure that Trump supporters were there, was all about stopping
mm-hmm.
the certification. Now, Jonathan, can you challenge, can you subpoena those people? Can you subpoena Ray Epps, for example? Can you make him appear on trial and have him, you know, call it entrapment or something like that? Can you get these people out there? Because obviously the January 6th Commission is there to cover it up. But can you, in trial, bring out this evidence? Jonathan?
I've issued a first group of subpoenas, which the court has to issue, and then we have to get served. And I have subpoenaed Ray Epps and John Sullivan, the Antifa guy.
That's neat.
And like I said, there is legal news, but we kind of got more into the celebration of January 6th as being good for Democrats and therefore a wonderful thing.
Oh, the left orgasmic power trip. That's what I call it.
Yeah, well, exactly right.
Well,
so I've subpoenaed Stuart Rose, the head of the Oath Keepers, who has not been indicted. It's interesting that Coy knows him, and I'm not necessarily – I mean, a lot of people think that Stuart Rose is in some sense working in federal government, which is, we've discussed, could be a lot of different things. It could be, you know, they caught him on something and they said, here's, you know, we won't say anything about it if you do this for us. Or it could be, you know, so just because someone is cooperating with federal government doesn't mean they're on the payroll. Yeah. But it's very odd that they have not indicted Michael Green and Stuart Rhodes, who were the top two people for January 6th, the Oath Keepers. And I've subpoenaed him, although at the very least, and, you know, the judge is not going to allow, like, a, you know, a lark from his perspective on conspiracy theories. But I do need to show that they did not come to Washington, D.C. to stop the certification vote. Because this is one thing I was going to say before, is that under the big 1512 statute that has most of the jail time associated with it, if you came to Washington to demand that Congress do it right, you are engaging in First Amendment protected activity. You're petitioning the government for the redress of grievances. If you came to stop the certification, which nobody did, that's stupid.
No, the deep state did, though.
Then
the deep state came to do that using supporters. See, that's the irony of this whole thing. You can't arrest people for insurrection when they were doing just the opposite. They were actually supporting the federal government and the actions that Congress was going to take. We can't arrest people for supporting the government.
See, that's why I come back to Mike Pence as a moron, because all he knows is that people say, you know, stand here, go over there, say this. You know, the idea that January 6th is just a ceremonial, and they've said this, it's a ceremonial event. No, it's not. You know, it, like, people brought their families there. It's not a photo op. You know, it's not a county fair. January 6th is a serious thing where they hear disputes. Everybody says it's where they count the votes, where they certify the votes. No, it's where they hear disputes. Mm-hmm. And that's where they got it wrong. But official Washington goes by its norms, which are completely numbskull, uninformed. They're like, well, the norm is we come together and we just all sing kumbaya and take photo ops, even though the Democrats have challenged votes practically every presidential election since 1876.
Oh, Hillary's still challenging it. That's kind of funny. Here's the thing, though.
Well, but even on the floor of Congress, they challenged it.
Yeah, but here's the problem. We got about 18 minutes left. I want to get to Cindy and Bianchi in this as well. But here's the problem, though. The closer you get to D.C., the more you hold the theory. What's that? Go ahead. Jonathan? Oh, Jonathan just dropped. Okay. He'll be right back. But here's the thing I've noticed. The closer you get to D.C., the more people hold the theory of incompetence. The further you get from D.C., the more you hold the theory that these people are just evil. And this is what I've noticed is that I remember when Claire Lopez used to be on the show, the same thing. Those people in the State Department are incompetent. I don't think they're incompetent. I think they're dangerous. I think they're willfully doing this. I think this has all been orchestrated. I think this has been well planned. I think they started planning it, November 4th of 2016, when the day after Trump or whatever the day was, the day after Trump got elected. This is all this is you want to talk about a conspiracy? This is a conspiracy, folks. This is what it looks like. All right. This is what a deep state conspiracy looks like. And they've got their actors lined up. They blame the Trump supporters. All this stuff is going on. Mike Pence, I got a bunch of articles on Mike Pence. I'm going to do a whole show on Mike Pence probably next week. But he is one of the most evil people in the country today, and he thinks he's going to be president. So he's consumed the Kool-Aid. He has made the deal with the devil. He has said, I want to be president, and I will do anything that it takes to get there if you, the deep state, will help me. He's kissed the ring. He's pledged his allegiance to the deep state and the globalists. He is hook, line, and sinker in there, and they're going to try and run him against Trump. And in that respect, I hope Trump wins.
I thought he was a religious man.
Well, I mean, you can claim anything. Yeah, well, he worships power and money. Remember what Shakespeare said, just in the Bible, the love of money is the root of all evil. Well, the love of power is pretty much right up there. Let's get Cindy on the conversation. And we only have Josie, Cindy, and Bianchi. We lost Jonathan. Hopefully he'll call back, but he might be in a bad cell area. Cindy, you've been listening for a while.
Well, you kind of struck my curiosity with saying that the vote or the certification was paused.
Mm-hmm. That was the whole point.
I didn't realize that.
Well, yeah. Okay, now let me get this for you and everybody else who's listening. This is an incredible record that we've accumulated today of evidence of what happened last January 6th, you know, from Coy and from Josie and from Jonathan, you know, the folks that were right there. But here's what happened. There was a blackout. There's a missing 6 hours. It's like the Nixon tapes, you know, the Watergate tapes, the missing 15 minutes, the missing 6 hours. What happened between the time that the real insurrection, the FBI operatives, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and all the people they paid to dress as Trump supporters walked into the Capitol, invited in by the Capitol Hill police. I'm hoping Jonathan can actually subpoena the greeters, as I'm calling it, the Capitol Hill greeters, you know, the ones that said, come on in. All right. So what happened between the time that they shut down Congress, both the Senate and the House, all right, and they were underground. They were all doing something for like 6 hours. I think, again, if I remember correctly, and I can check this out, it's in the congressional record, 1 o'clock for the House, 2 o'clock for the Senate. They shut down. And they went underground. Then they came back.
Because of the activity that was going on.
Right. Exactly. Well, I know why it was done, but what was done? That's the question. See, now, this is my theory of what I call the talk. Again, the talk is what happened while the Senate and the House were underground for those 6 hours. All right. They got the talk. And the talk is, if you want your committee chairs, if you want to maintain your position, if you want any funding at all, you know, for your campaigns. And I think the talk was given by Kevin McCarthy and Nancy Pelosi in the House. And I think it was given by, Cindy, that's your cell phone again. I think it was given by Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer in the Senate. And the talk was, here's what you're going to do. Now, some of you, if you want to vote against Brandon, that's okay. 12 senators and 147 House members voted against Brandon, against the certification. Didn't matter. The overwhelming majority, the ones that got the talk, the ones that wanted their positions, the never Trumpers, anybody else, they dutifully certified Brandon illegally because the states did not have the electoral challenges. But that's what went on. So my question is, before Panky, hold on a second, just before you get in. So what happened during that 6 hours? It's not even in the congressional record. There's a blackout of everything that happened. That's the secret of January 6th. What happened when Congress left the normal halls, the Senate chamber and the House chamber, and they went underground? What happened between when they left around 1 or 2 and they came back at 7 or 8? That's about 6 hours unaccounted for. That's the real
story. Explained by the fact that they were evacuating because of what was going on.
Right. Okay, but what happened? They all evacuated underground.
They were cowering.
Where?
I thought it was underneath the Capitol.
Right.
They got tunnels underneath the Capitol.
So you're saying they were conducting business during that time?
Absolutely. No, I'm saying they're getting the talk. They said, here's how we're going to play this. And you're either going to play ball with us or you're not. And if you don't play ball, then you're not going to go anywhere. Now, you'll notice that Ted Cruz has sucked in the Kool-Aid too. He's talking about the insurrection and the terrorists and the evil Republicans who stormed the Capitol. He's taken the Kool-Aid. So somebody got to him. That just happened like yesterday, the day before. So what happened during those 6 hours? You want to know the real story of January 6th? You want to know what business was conducted? What was the talk? What happened when Congress went underground? And then came back with totally changed votes. I'm
going to
find out. Yeah, we are.
Out is if somebody amongst them was recording everything that went on.
We got witnesses. We got almost 500 members of the House and 100 senators that know what happened. And they're not talking yet.
But, Cindy, do you understand why come people was expecting Pence to do something else other than what he'd done?
He was the deciding factor in stopping what was happening, was my
idea. Do you know why he was supposed to? The reason why is because the initial suits that came out of Texas, because you had a controversy that was going on between states on the outcome of the election in each state. And in each state, that controversy was supposed to have been held by the state legislatures. That's what's listed in the Constitution. That's why come when they went to court to sue, the judges wouldn't hear it because it's supposed to be settled with the state legislatures. And when people heard that, what the court said, it was nothing wrong. Well, the courts didn't say that. The courts just refused to hear it, which they was supposed to do, not to get involved.
Which is why he was supposed to block certifying their electoral votes.
When you have a controversy like that, it shouldn't be certified. No, it shouldn't. They should have been went right back to the state legislature. And here's
so
the biggest problem.
We were relying on Pence to stop that.
Well, yes, but the biggest problem was that the people in those states did not hold their state legislatures accountable.
Okay. Yeah. I might not have understood that part of it, but I knew that there was reliance on Pence to stop the fact that things seemed to be illegal in the voting process, so he had the power to prevent the Electoral College from certifying the election.
Well, basically, yes. That's basically how it worked. Which, if you had some states showing that Biden didn't win this state, and then you got ballots that showing going to Pence, then, well, we vote for Biden. Well, there's something wrong there that needs to be taken care of.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I didn't understand the significance of, you know, why it mattered that the House and the Senate had gone underground. It makes sense that they would have gone underground with what was happening at the Capitol to, you know, protect themselves from what they saw as a threat.
But
I
not a single reporter is asking what happened during those 6 hours. Not a single major reporter in the country has even speculated on what happened during those 6 hours. And yet they all came back with completely different votes. People that the day before promised to challenge the electors in all those different states that we talked about, the seven states with the dual sets of electors, came back and sheepishly, wimpishly came back with their tails between their legs. I remember, what's her name? Is it Kelly Griffin was the one from Georgia, the senator that lost? Big surprise there. You know, said, I've changed my mind for the good of the country, you know, and
right.
So another senator, the senators, you get the recordings. They're out there. And just wimpishly said, oh, but for the good of the country, we have Mitch McConnell is the worst of all. We've got to move on.
Yeah.
You know, move on from what? Treason? You're committing treason right there. Right there in front of us, you're committing treason. We're watching it happen. Move on, hell. We need to move
and
back.
Greg,
yeah.
And Greg, as we were standing in the back, we were hoping that things will settle down and they will continue with the meeting. But, of course, they got out of hand and people were coming out that they...
Somebody
was saying that they poop in Nancy Pelosi's desk and a lot of laughs was going on.
Oh, don't do that. I don't want to hear about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
but here's the question for you. How come the Geldings had to pick it up
right
the next
now,
day? Go ahead.
Okay. Right now, the Democrats want Mike Pence to run for president.
Of course they do.
Do you know that?
Yeah, that's part of the – yeah. Yeah, have you noticed that?
What?
That's, no, they do. No, in fact, I've got an article. Josie's absolutely right. I told you, Mike Pence is the next John McCain and Mitt Romney. That's going to be his role. He's going to run against all the conservative Republicans. He's going to run as the moderate, the reasonable, the rational one, the one who's going to move the Republicans forward, bring stability to the country. I can write his talking points right now. You know, the one who's not Trump, who will be, you know, who will bring dignity and honor back to the presidency. You know, he won't be a racist, sexist, homophobe, misogynist, Nazi. Mike Pence is the good white guy. Okay.
Yes.
So that's it. So, but let's get the. Oh, I was making a comment before. I forget what it was.
But
how come there's not? How come there isn't a challenge to what happened underground? How come there isn't? How come not a single reporter has reported on the fact that all those people in Congress they disappeared for 6 hours and they came back completely changed? What the hell happened?
Yes.
That.
And I'm very
is the January
insurrection. I'm very familiar with the underground and the Capitol because I used to play there as a young girl, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's cool. Jonathan's back with us too. Jonathan, what do you think of all this? We got about 6 minutes left.
No, there are tunnels and subways underground that go to the from the Capitol building to the office buildings. So it does, you know, if they went down, they could have gone out to their the office buildings. It could be anywhere.
They? There's no reports of the members of Congress. There's no reports of the senators or representatives taken off from Capitol Hill for their safety. If they're really in danger, wouldn't they be evacuated?
They could. They could be. They could be put on the. There's this little trolley train on the Senate side and this side. And they could be taken to their to the House office building or the Senate office buildings. There's three each, and underground parking garages for the. And they could be, you know, they could be in West Virginia at Mount Weather.
Yeah, they could be moved to a safe location, but they weren't moved to a safe location. But you'll notice that the delay was just long enough to put it near the end of the day, 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock. So they came back, you know, committed their treason, and then they went home, and then they refused to take it up the next day. They could have, January 7th, they could have said, you know what, we didn't finish our work yesterday. Yeah, there was a bunch of people walking around upstairs. Well, let's continue on. You notice they didn't do that. Why? That was part of the insurrection. Part of the insurrection was part
well,
of the talk
and you noticed,
that went on during that 6 hours was they would never take this up again.
You
what
noticed
you
that in terms of the misinformation and stuff, how Congress pretends that it's still another day. You know, it is not unusual for Congress to, like, if they convene on January 6th and they continue meeting for another 10 days, they will pretend it's still January 6th. You know, they do this all the time. So they will, you know, they'll play games with whether it's still a continuation of the opening day.
Right.
So once they convened, there was no reason why they had to finish on January 6th, in my mind. I think differently, but.
In terms
but,
of what? What's different?
Some people think that if they had, that some, I don't know what their theories are, but there's some people have theories about why it had to be done in the middle of the night and they couldn't wait. And
yeah,
I think that once
January 7th,
I think once they started, they didn't have to finish on January 6th. The Constitution requires them to convene on January 6th.
But that's part of the coup. That's what I'm saying. The reason they finished, they were sequestered for 6 hours to get the talk, and then they followed their orders and voted in Brandon, and then refused to take it up the next day. Like nothing had ever happened. You know, that's insane.
Well,
that's the coup. That
you're
is the
absolutely
coup.
Right.
Pianchi,
you're absolutely
ahead.
Right, Greg. There's something going on there. It's seriously going on. Just like the debate that Barack Obama and Mitt Romney had when people said that Obama was rope-a-doping that first debate. This has been going on for quite some time.
Oh,
and
the stage debate?
Each incident smells of the previous one.
Yeah, and then Romney lost the next two debates on purpose where he threw the election. Yeah, Romney threw the election after the first debate because it looked like he was going to win. We couldn't have that. That's part of the plan. Cynthia, what do you think? Are you with us on all our conspiracies? And I'm not talking theories. I'm talking conspiracies.
I always try to play devil's advocate. And just my theory or I guess what I assumed to be was that they needed to – finalize that for the good of the country is what I assumed they because you know
you
based on what
that?
Happened in the Capitol,
that?
Huh?
Do you still assume that was for the good of the country? What happened putting Brandon in the White House?
No. I mean, you're giving me information that I can consider. Just
as
the layman, you know, I looked at it as they had to. Finalize this to move forward with the country, with the government, because, you know, what happened at the Capitol that day should have been enough to close things down and deal with it the next day. I was surprised.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, there's enough people in the Capitol. They could have closed it down. But as Jonathan said, 10 days later, they still would have considered it January 6th. Once an ongoing investigation starts, you know, it doesn't stop. You know, you don't.
So
the timeline stops. If you have a statute of limitations of a year and 364 days in, you start the investigation. It doesn't stop on day 365. You're within your statute of limitations. You can investigate as long as you want.
Yeah, but my layman understanding was okay. They needed to do this because we had to get on with the good of the country.
Now you know that's not true.
You know, you can examine the ballots for 22 months. And anytime within that 22 months that you start examining the ballots, the clock stops and starts up only when you are completed. So actually the examination of the ballots can go on and on and on.
Yep. We got a minute and a half, actually less than that. Jesse, take 45 seconds. We'll give Jonathan 45, and then we're done. Jesse?
I want to give my opinion on the death of the young veteran. My opinion is she's alive. She's not dead. Of course, you're probably going to disagree. But,
we'll do it another day.
There's evidence in the videos where she's putting stuff in her mouth to start bleeding in the mouth. So this is all a plan. So you'll see coming up soon. So.
Well, let's take it up Tuesday. Give me the whole story. Jonathan? No, I appreciate it. Jesse, and thank you so much for bringing it on. Boy, that was brilliant. That was a great, nice move.
Well,
Jonathan,
I
you got 45 seconds.
Because Victoria White just filed a lawsuit by Joe McBride last night for being beaten at the Capitol. So that just happened. And that's why I had to get off the phone there for a minute.
No, that's fine. Listen,
so
you got more important things to do.
Okay.
So are you representing
next
her?
Next week.
Are you going to represent
I'm
her? Or are you
yes.
involved?
I'm one of three lawyers.
Oh, my God. Isn't this great? You guys are doing such great work.
That's great.
We've got
Thank
Sydney
you.
Powell involved with Coy, with his suit. I got to look up that. We've got Jonathan involved defending people on January 6th, and now Victoria White. This is fabulous. You guys are doing amazing work. Hey, listen, thanks, everybody. Yes. We have to go. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be a fun day. We're going to talk about dueling.
You know, pray for SCOTUS tomorrow.
What's that?
Pray for SCOTUS.
Well, let's see what happens tomorrow. This should be interesting. We'll take up what they do Monday. Wow. Got to go, folks. Thank you for an amazing show. And now part of the record, so anybody can listen to what we talked about today and hear the real story of January 6th. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Remember our legislative site, which is writeyourlaws.com. A couple of things I didn't mention. Eric Colley, who is our small business marketing person, did our website. And you can reach him at where's his email? I can't find it. I'll have to do it tomorrow. And, of course, Strikeforce, our help as well, at strikeforceenergy.com. Oh, bsmallbusiness.com is how you reach Eric Colley. Anyway, I'll pick up all the things I should have done today, tomorrow, but I wanted to get all this stuff on the record. And we will pick it up tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock Central Time in the morning. Yeah, there we go.